Blog Talk Radio.
The United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Right, left, in a wrong world.
And I need you.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll-free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It's 8 minutes after the hour of 12 noon. Here on the 20th, today is Tuesday, tomorrow will be Wednesday, and the next day is our famous Thanksgiving, and we will be doing the best up on Thanksgiving and on that following Friday, and we'll see you back here on Monday. It's open mic today, and the number is 347-945-5229. I want to hear from you today. I want to know how we can express yourself, tell us what's on your mind, what's going on in your world, things that you have observed. We catch into a conversation, and I know sometimes people say, Tracy, we have a hard time following you because there's so many voices and there's so much going on. But, you know, some cultures go after barbershops. And, you know, somebody said African-American barbershops, Italian kitchens, and when they're sitting down in the living room in an Italian home, you'll have that many voices going on. And this is, that's just their culture. And so you have to just jump in and listen in and then catch the voice that sounds most like you, and then try to call in and express yourself. And because we want to hear from you today, we are an open forum. I just ask that you do not cuss openly. You know, don't say anything that you would not say in front of your children, please. And we don't say anything bad in front of our children. And that we could be courteous, no matter how much we disagree. At the end of the day, we become cohesive for a common effort, and we respect everyone. Again, the number is 347-945-5229. There are a couple things on my mind today. One is I want to talk about market measures, and I want to talk about minimum wage. I want to talk about that because I want people to have an understanding that if minimum wage was set and nothing goes up and nothing would change because of minimum wage, then minimum wage would be a good thing to go up all the time. But what happens is we seek after minimum wage, and the employers and the consumers and all of the products that we go, goods and services, tend to go up. So there is a slowdown in hiring, or a layoff, or a reorganization, as they call it, or an attrition. There is a bump within your going to McDonald's and buying your cheese. And so I have a little clip to play about that. So I'm going to do that today. Also, want to talk about what's going on down in Florida with Alan West. Alan West is he's a congressman right now, and there have been disturbing irregularities within his numbers, and he's not backing down, nor is he conceding. I want to talk about that a little bit because I'm still confused by the numbers. I don't understand, and maybe I can find someone out there who's smarter than me that can tell me how you can have more people registered to vote. A lesser number of registered people to vote and more people voting inside of a certain precinct. And the question is, if that is the case, then how does that skew towards the numbers of the election in other precincts? Doesn't mean that it will change anything. The question is, how is that happening, and is it a fair election? So I want to talk about that. Also, there's a guy by the name of Mensa Atabal. He's out of West Africa, so let me put it that way. And he preached a sermon in the last couple of days, and it was about voting, and he was talking to the Ghanaians about voting, and they're going to be going to the polls in a couple of weeks, and talking about you don't vote every time the same way just because of tradition, but you vote based upon your belief system, what's going to be best for you, and how you give your sovereignty over to someone else when you vote. And so I'm going to see if I can try to do some stuff. I probably won't do that until tomorrow or next week, because I think we need to – our election is over, so I'm past partisan politics. I'm past all that. Now it's just about America, and it's about reporting what's going on in America so that people can have a great life and that they can advance. And if we do not, as people who are, and I call us the working poor, those are people that if you take a paycheck from me, I will be in a soup line in a month. If you don't take that away from me, and if we don't start doing things differently, it's not going to change. And you can't depend upon your politicians to make a change if you don't demand it. And I think that's one of our biggest issues here that we have in America. You have your people that have no idea how to make it change. So since they don't know how to make it change, they allow other people to change it for them on their behalf. And very, very few people have your best interest at heart. What they have is their best interest, and they use you for it. So I want to do that. I'll talk a little bit about that today. Brother Mann, it's good to see you in the chat room. Haven't seen you in a while. So I want you to call in and tell me what's on your mind. Thanksgiving is coming up. I've got so much to be thankful for just by being alive and being here. So many people have not made it this far. So I'm grateful that I'm here and that I have made it to this point of the 20th of November. What else is going on with me today? 724, your mic is on.
Hi, Tracy.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Wonderful, and you?
I'm doing good.
I just called because I was kind of concerned. I thought, was it Debbie Wasserman Schultz was crowing about how her party was the party of inclusion with the minorities and women and everything like that, but I thought it was kind of hypocritical of her to say that when it was her party that replaced Alan West and then put out all stops to keep Mia Love from being elected to Congress out in Utah there.
Well, you know, they have selective inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to look at it that way. They have selective inclusion. They have inclusion that will think that their way, but if you don't, if you go against the grain, you can't be included.
Yeah. I just saw it. I thought it was kind of hypocritical.
Hey, Larry, I got a question for you. You're one of them black Republicans.
Yes.
What do Republicans have to do to make their party stronger and have more diversity?
It's a packaging, Tracy, I guess. If they would have called you and asked you that, maybe we would have had a chance. But I'm more leaning, and I think it was Rush, and I think Ann Calder said it. I don't think we need to go against our conservative principles. I think we need
absolutely
to make
not.
Sure we need to explain how those conservative principles will help and uplift us. But it's real hard when you got the federal government. I guess it's different from us. Our ancestors were brought here. But other people that wanted to come here, they wanted to come here for an opportunity. They didn't expect any handouts when they got here. And I don't mean that in a bad way, handout. But when you've got the federal government now, and, you know, as far as for immigration, they're given in these packets how to apply for food stamps, how to apply for all that. And that's not what people came to the United States for.
But, you know, I look at this, and I think what we have is a bad marketing program.
Absolutely.
And I honestly believe that. I believe that our marketing, we know nothing about branding and imaging. And Republicans have not learned how to market themselves as inclusionists, and they've allowed other people to name them. It's like African American males.
Right.
African American males are not who you saw or who you have seen on television over the years. They really, really aren't.
I agree with that.
They are not Dolomite. They are not. You know, I'm trying to think. They are not, what's his name from Good Times?
Jimmy Walker's character.
Jimmy Walker. That's not who they are. And so for so many years, that's how they branded African-American males. And it worked to our detriment. in a lot of ways, and I think the Republican Party falls into the same slot. They've allowed somebody else to brand them instead of branding themselves, and I'm not quite sure how they get out of this, because the people that I know, and are there ignorant people around? Absolutely.
Right.
But the people that I run with in the Republican Party are not a bunch of racists. Now, do they say some ignorant things sometimes? Absolutely, but that's not because they're racist. They're just ignorant. And if you've never been around something, if you don't know something is offensive, how are you going to know any different? But I don't think
right.
we ought to change our messaging, because right now, and then I don't know how we become inclusive when by the time we get back in power again. The framework of America is going to change so drastically, because I see where President Obama has nominated his first gay federal judge.
Right.
So I don't know how you have your principles and you stand up with them when they're going to change them so that you can never go back to them before you get there. In the next 2 years, you'll never be able to go back to being conservative again.
That's why I say we stick to our conservative. You don't ever hear when Democrats lose, they say, well, we got to become more anti-abortion or anything like that. They and I'm talking about the left side of the Democratic Party, which it appears that there's more left, far left, than centrist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But as I'm looking at this, I'm watching these people. I don't know how we get back to center, Larry, after this term.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult because that's why the exit polls were so crazy, Tracy. I heard, 68% of the people that in the exit polls saying that the economy was their number one thing, but then they turned around and voted for the guy that, demeaning and tearing down the economy. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I like Obama. We share a lot in common. His father looked like my father. His mom looked like my mother, but his policies are anti-business. So 68% of the people said one thing, but then they voted 51% at least voted against their number one issue, which was the economy.
But the question is, did they vote against it? Because when you look at the map is truly red, except for your urban populace. They
right.
demonized Romney to the point where most women did not vote for Mitt Romney. African Americans did not vote for Mitt Romney. Latinos did not vote for Mitt Romney. That's where his base came from. But the question is, this base that he went after is going to turn America into something that America is not. And I don't think they were educated enough to know that their vote was going to be very, very damaging based upon propaganda and not based upon fact.
Right. And that's because, you look at it, and everybody gets on Fox and MSNBC, right? Fox on the right, MSNBC on the left. You throw those two out. Let's throw them out, and you listen to everybody else. You still hear they were trumpeting Obama that whole last week of the campaign on everything. And, you can't beat that just by raising your own money and having blaring the airwaves. But
No.
I still think, Tracy, we have our biggest thing is we need to educate ourselves on the process. Because a lot of people have no idea, like I said it when I was in your show that Wednesday after the election. My sister, as educated as she is, she owns her own business, she understands business, but she has no idea the difference between a deficit and a national debt. Was clueless. And then when I tried to explain it to her, she didn't want to hear it. But they need to understand that deficit and that national debt, that affects everything. You want gay marriage and all this other stuff. It ain't going to matter if we broke.
But, see, that's just it. It doesn't matter if you're broke. But look at the Republicans actually articulate their message. I mean, when I go back and look at the commercials that were run, did they really do a good job articulating the message that they needed to portray?
No. But, again, you look at the thing. All Mitt Romney said, and it kind of got lost because it was Big Bird. He was like, my test for spending will be, do we borrow from China to pay for this? And so, I can't remember the name of the commentator, but he mentioned him by name, and then he said, I'm sorry,
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. But everything, the whole message was lost, is he wants to get rid of Big Bird. And then how are you going to balance the budget just on Big Bird? And that's not what he said, but that's the way it got played.
But why is it that his commercials did not reiterate? That's where I'm going. Why did his commercials not reiterate what he said? What he said was, you cannot continue to use a credit card.
Tracy, honestly, without being in the room with Mitt and that decision-making process, I think he thought, just like the Republican primary, he had it in the bag. Everything was saying, just like I said, the pollings don't make sense. Everybody's saying the economy is the number one issue and that they trusted Mitt more. So during the Republican primaries, he kind of put it on cruise control. And I believe he thought, he was actually, from what I've heard from people that were there, he was devastated. There was no way that he thought that he was going to lose.
They tell me he didn't even write a concession speech.
Huh, he did. He scribbled down something.
But again, that goes back to why. I am certain that they had no people of they had no street people. I'm gonna put it that way.
Well,
on his floor.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
How do you go after something when you know nothing about what you're going after, and you don't have them close by to say, listen, this is how this is playing. It's like that's, you know, I got to go back to this this voter suppression issue. Larry, there's no way in God's green earth that you could say there was voter suppression in the state of Ohio.
No.
And yet we allowed that to fly.
Yeah, and nobody's defending Houston on it.
No, and they're going to throw Houston under the bus. And they're going after him the same way they went after Ken Blackwell.
Right, in 2004.
Absolutely. And it carried over into his election in 2006. They demonized him when he was the best man for the job. And they allowed it to fly.
You know, and we eat our own, Tracy. I mean, you see everybody now throwing Mitt underneath the bus. And I thought, of all the candidates that were actually running or had a chance to win, that Mitt was the best one we had for the time that we're facing. You know?
When I went into the convention, Mitt was not my first choice. I knew he was going to come out and be the choice. But after I got to actually figure out who he was, what he was about, I came to the realization that he was the best choice for this season. I'm with you on that.
Right.
But I don't understand why they did not utilize the resources that they had around them instead of allowing him to be demonized by something that was not true.
I heard.
Well, I think that
go ahead, Philadelphia.
I think the Republican Party can make a comeback if you appeal to the small business community that it consists mostly of Hispanics and Asians in most of these urban cities. And I think if you reform the message on immigration and allow certain forms of amnesty for certain Hispanics in certain parts of the country, and you appeal to Asians and Hispanics who are small business owners and allow them to come into the Republican convention, I think you would win most national elections, because the African-American vote is significant, but it could be trumped by the Asian and Hispanic vote if that vote is large enough. So the African-Americans may vote en masse for the Democratic Party, but if you get Hispanics and certain Hispanics and certain Chinese and certain Indians to vote for the Republican Party, then that would outweigh the African American vote.
Yeah, but I hear that. But on the federal side, I mean, we're going down. We're spending money in Mexico today on telling these people how to come here and apply for food stamps and you get free education and all this stuff. So we're not like I said back in the day. It's different than Tracy and I. and I don't know your ethnic background, Philly, but our ancestors were brought here. Most of the people
right.
that came here, that emigrated here, they came here for a better opportunity. They didn't want a handout. They wanted government out of their way, and they worked hard. They I mean, there's people.
But they worked hard.
But the problem is, but the problem is that the African Americans were told in the big cities that they would only be able to get employment in the public sector. And even today, most African Americans do not work in the private sector. They work in the public sector. So if they grow the government, then it's a better chance that they'll get a job. So that's the reason why they vote for the Democratic Party all the time. Then also the labor unions control a lot of the big cities. And so the labor unions encourage the African American pastors and leaders to get their people to vote for the Democratic Party. Because also a lot of African-American families need food stamps and other government subsidies to stay afloat. So, even though some of us live in the suburbs, the majority of us live in the inner city. And so, therefore,
right.
we need the government's help to keep the bills paid. So that's another reason why they vote for the Democratic Party.
But my question is, how do Republicans go after this vote without changing? Because remember, as I said a little bit earlier, by the time the next election comes around in 2 years, the face of America will change drastically.
Yes.
You see it
yes.
changing today.
Well,
Hold on, Philly.
Yes.
The problem is, How do you maintain your conservative values?
Well, most
Philly, that was a comma.
Right. Okay. All right.
How do you maintain your conservative values when you'll never be able to put this liberal agenda back into the box?
Yeah. Well, my
right now, because I want to ask Larry first because he was on there first. I want to know because when I look at this. Things are changing so rapidly, and we keep on losing our focus, and people think that the election is over, and because it's over, they no longer have to pay attention, which is a misnomer. Now is the time that you pay attention to what's going on, because things are happening, and people think that that President Obama is out there playing golf and watching the Gaza Strip on TV as he goes to Asia. But deals are being cut, things are happening, and the conservative way of life is not going to be able to go back. So what do we do now?
Well, you know, I wish I had that answer, Tracy, but all I just do is, and I do it on Facebook, I do it with my family. When I see the results, I mean, I point them out. I mean, like everybody's been on this Twinkie thing and Hostess, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Hostess was a poorly run company. But if you look into what the union said the reason they struck for was their pension benefit, was their cut in pay, and their increased health care costs. That was their three things, why they struck Hostess. Well, two of those I can't control. But that third one on health care costs, the president said that if we passed Obamacare, that cost curve would bend downward. And all it's been doing is shooting up, actually increasing. So you just got to educate people and say, listen, here it is. Healthcare costs is a concern, not just for Hostess, the big one, but the small one too. And so now Obamacare is here and it's going to be implemented. We need to realize the full ramifications of that. And I hear you, Philly. I've spent about 6 months in Philly working for a company. I fly out of Pittsburgh on Monday and come back Saturday morning. But people need to understand, okay, yeah, you work for the city or you work for the county or you work for the state or whatever. They don't generate any money. They get money from taxes from people outside in the private sector. Now, if the private sector is hurting, then that means your revenue is going to go down in the public sector and they're going to have layoffs. You see it wholesale in the city of Detroit right now. Detroit, California writ large, or Greece. I mean, they got no money to where now the state's going to come in and take over, and now your local control is gone. Somebody
and they're
in
mad.
Lansing is, yeah.
And they're mad about it. And I, can't understand. They're mad that somebody's going to have to come in and take over when they don't understand that they have given their power over to an entity and it has been raped of all of its resources. And the people are mad that their vote no longer matters because it's all been given over to Lansing. But you can't explain to them that you allowed this to happen by your vote.
Yeah, exactly.
And see, the question is, when you go to the federal government, who's going to come and take the federal government over when they go and go belly up?
That's the big thing. Greece has Germany and France to bail them out, right?
So we
don't have anybody to bail us out.
But to answer your question about the liberal agenda affecting the Republican Party, it wouldn't. Most Hispanics are Catholic. So therefore, most Hispanics, if they attend church, they believe in the values of the Catholic Church. So that would make them social conservatives. They would be people who would be against things like abortion and contraception being given by the government. The only issue you would have to appeal to them with is the issue of immigration. The Republican Party may have to change its policy on immigration, but everything else could be kept in place. But you would have to be able to appeal to the small business people who are operating businesses in the urban areas, and you would have to appeal to them on tax policies for the middle class.
Listen here, look at the demographics right now. Look at what's going on right now. Today, President Obama, he nominated the first openly gay federal judge.
Mm.
Okay. And he's an African-American, the first African-American male who's openly gay federal judge to a seat in Florida. We need to understand when you begin to spend and you begin to nominate and you begin to change the infrastructure such as the Supreme Court and your federal judges, everything changes based upon those nominations and those seats.
Yeah. But
let me finish, Philadelphia. When you bankrupt the coal industry and you make it to where they can no longer support the infrastructure of the coal industry, you can't go back in another year and a half and light that coal industry up.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of us learning from our history, we tend to want to repeat it, because if you go back and look at what happened to the steel mills and the Mahoning Valley, what they did to the steel mills, instead of Carter coming in and stepping up to the plate and make sure that the outside resources were not dumping steel into America at a cheaper price, they abandoned the American steel products, and now we are where we are right now. Am I wrong, Larry?
No, you're not.
And we no longer will have, and between that and the EPA, you can no longer make steel in America like it once was made.
Well, Tracy, on history repeating itself, I think I used that quote on that Wednesday. It was by Woody Allen. History has to repeat itself because nobody was paying attention the first time. So when you shut down, like you're saying, the coal industry, it won't come back.
Right
and
now,
people don't understand. They look at it and say, okay, that's a coal miner. It doesn't bother me. But yes, it does, because coal is the cheapest out there to generate electric. So if
now
you have to now switch, you're going to pay more at the for your home, for your businesses, everything.
Your Marcellus and Utica Shale, when you're looking at the natural gas and wet gases, which we're actually sitting on right now, if the EPA chokes the neck out of and or the legislators here in Ohio are given the opportunity to choke the neck out of the gas that's in here, how are you going to contend in a global market of energy, because that's going to be the next boom? If you strangle them with EPA regulations based on a liberal, what they call it, a global warming agenda.
Yeah, global warming. But
it's climate change now, Tracy, because it's not warming, so now they change it to climate change.
Okay.
This emphasis on homosexuals and homosexuality, this is going to backfire on Obama, because many of the new immigrants that come from different parts of the world, homosexuality is condemned. And so even in places like India and many of the Hispanic people that come from Mexico, as I said before, most of them are Catholics. Most of them come from conservative backgrounds, and they don't believe in homosexuality.
Philadelphia, you can't say that, because if that be so, then he would not have gotten elected the way he did. But you have to know that the Catholic Church, hold on. If you look at the polls, the exit polls, if you look at this past election, with everything that was going on and the Catholic Church and even the bishops coming out against President Obama, he should not have been reelected in the way that he was.
The reason why he got elected is because of the policy on immigration that the Republican Party did not.
You missed the point. So what super
hold on. Did not try to articulate the right policy on immigration.
Philadelphia. So you mean to tell me immigration was more important than they call your Catholicism of your faith?
Yes, because you have over 7 million immigrants in the Southwest that are in the country now that are working, that can easily be deported if they don't have the right policy on immigration.
But they're not voting.
They have is
hold up,
verified.
Doc. But hold on, Doc.
Excuse me for a second. The Republican Party has done that. The first amnesty was back when Ronald Reagan offered amnesty, and the problems still come back. George Bush was probably, I think he got the biggest percentage of Hispanic votes ever. And I think it was, a combination of his brother, Jeb, was married to an Hispanic. And I see they're actually grooming his son, Jeb's son, down in Florida to make a run at something. But, immigration reform, the first thing, if your boat is leaking, you plug the hole first. Then you bail the water out, right? We haven't done anything on our borders. And then when a state like Arizona tries to, the federal government comes in and sues them. They threatened to take, Sheriff Arapo down there? They threatened to take that man to jail. So, and people also need to realize that illegal immigration has a huge cost. Now, in Ohio, we haven't seen a whole bunch of it. But go out to California now where you got all these undocumented illegal aliens, but we're housing them, feeding them, and the government encourages it. We're telling them how to do it.
That's why they're bankrupt.
Yeah.
And you also have to include these people in the convention. Their faces have to be seen.
No, dude. You don't understand. When you say these faces have to be seen, you have to go to the convention. It's not that you're excluded from the convention, but they don't bust people in.
But what I'm saying is when the camera pans the audience, cannot see white faces. They have
and
to
what
see
I'm saying to you, Philadelphia, I was
Hispanic
Philadelphia,
faces.
Philadelphia, I was there. What I'm saying is you have to understand, you have to want to go to the convention. You have to have the resources to go to the convention, and then we don't bust people in. You can't bust people to your convention.
That needs to change. Because if the Democratic Party can have a variety of races on the convention floor, then the Republican Party needs to have that as well.
But you cannot bust people in. What did you say, Larry?
That we did. Susan Martinez, the governor of New Mexico, was a prime. She had a prime speaking spot. Mia Love. We had some Hispanics. Who was the one? I think he's a senator.
Marco Rubio?
Well, Rubio was there, but there was another one from Texas, Cruz.
Yes.
There was all kinds of Hispanics. So the myth that the Republican Party doesn't have them, we put prominent. You know what I mean? Versus the Democrat, they'll throw a
they throw a party for them.
Yeah. They'll bring in a Latin American that's a singer, maybe. You know what I mean? Or something like that. We have some prominent Hispanics that are Republicans. Susan Martinez Cruz from Texas, who won the congressional seat down there. You have Mia Love, who's an African-American woman out of Utah.
Yeah, Condoleezza Rice spoke.
Yeah.
Condoleezza.
Rubio. Now, and Philadelphia, but you've got to understand, your delegates to the actual convention, you have to actually know how to go about doing that. If you're not Republican, you can't go. It's not a room of independence.
Well, that's what the Republican Party needs to be able to work on, is to get diversity in the audience.
But the, you're missing my point.
No, I'm not missing the point. I'm not missing the point, because if the Democrats can do it, then Republicans need to do it as well.
But are you understanding? You cannot just go out and recruit and bus people in. It's not, I mean, it's just not that easy. And so you, what you want is you establish your platform and you become a part of your infrastructure, but that starts at the precinct committee person at the lower level, inside of your counties. And then you have to understand.
We live in a media age. We live in a media age, and people look at images. And if they see images where all they see is white faces, that's going to turn a lot of people off.
In these urban areas
where you have a great diversity of races living there.
I understand that. But the question is, how in the world do you take an infrastructure with the media? The woman from CNN at the convention who said that somebody threw peanuts at her and called her a monkey. I was at the convention for the whole time, from the time it started until the time it closed and the day after. And I did not get anyone to become that ignorant with me at all, because I'd have made the news too. They blew that story up like everybody, every black person at the convention was treated like they were inferior to everyone else. Now, I have a problem. The media did that. The media did that because one person out of all the thousands of people that were there was disrespected. But they didn't come and ask me how I felt.
They're not going to, because that doesn't play into the narrative. Like, Tracy, I mean, you know me, the caller there from Philly don't. I'm fairly light-skinned, so much so that I've been Greek, Italian, I've been everything. And then when they find out that my ethnic background is like, oh, okay. So I was at 4 Mitt Romney events. I was at 2 of Ryan's and various others, and, you know, to where you would be, somebody could slip up and say something because I don't look like Jeff Green, for instance. You know what I mean, Tracy?
That's what I'm saying.
And I didn't hear it. You know what I mean? And I was prominent around there. There's, you know, I'm a big guy, and I did not hear that. So that's what they want you to hear on, you know, MSNBC, CNN, and the rest of that. But that's not the case. I met some wonderful people out there in Ohio. This was all Ohio. I can't say I was across the country. I was all over Ohio. And I didn't see that.
As a matter of fact, did they walk up to you and almost want to hug you because they were glad to see you?
There were just a lot of nice people that I met, people from all walks of life, people that I would not have thought would be at an event like that. I met one of the guys named Rob Skinner. I grew up with Rob. He's a redneck hillbilly, but he drives a truck, and he hauls coal, and that's how he makes his living. And he come up to me, and he said, Larry, I've never voted Republican in my life, but I'm voting for Mitt Romney, and this is the reason he is. So I did not, and I'm just telling you, I did not see the racism. Now, I've seen racism. I've seen it on both sides. And so that racism is not exclusive to the GOP.
And that's my problem. And they try to make it exclusive to them and then say that they don't want inclusion, which is not true. They take the ignorance out of some people and they blow it up. It's like the Tea Party.
Yeah.
All the people in the Tea Party weren't racist people.
No.
As a matter of fact, the majority of them didn't care a hillbilly less about a race. All they wanted was smaller government and constitution.
If you'd have listened to that Chris Matthews, you'd have thought this whole thing, that all Romney did was accuse him of being black. But I seen some of the biggest racism in 08 during the Democratic primary from guys like Ted Strickland, Ed Rendell, the vice president, you know what I mean, Harry Reid. They said some stuff that was just foul.
But that was different because they're Democrats and they didn't mean it like that.
Well, it was Bill Clinton was the one that said that Obama was the black candidate when he thought he was going to beat his wife in the primary.
So why do we love Bill Clinton? And Bill Clinton can go around and now support the brother, and it's okay because he was the first black president. I mean, you have to understand how disingenuous this is to the complete electorate of America.
Bill Clinton told Ted Kennedy when he tried to get Kennedy to endorse his wife, he said, come on now, Ted, you know this guy would have been carrying our luggage 10 years ago. Let Mitt Romney say something like that, or Newt Gingrich or something. It would have been like Jimmy the Greek. Never heard from him ever again.
The African Americans are in the Democratic Party's back pocket because of the dependency on government, namely through food stamps and welfare, and also the dependency on the public sector for employment. So the African Americans will always vote Democratic. But it's these other ethnic groups that are larger in numbers now who operate most of the small businesses and are most of the entrepreneurs in the inner city. If the Republican Party can appeal to them, they can win a lot of these elections. But they're not appealing to them right now.
So my question is, going back to my original question, I got to take a break in a minute. But my question is, there's two of them. One, do we not see, as African Americans, where the Democrat Party is already being disingenuous because they already cut food stamps? That didn't come out until after the election.
$50 a month in Ohio.
And so do we not understand that being dependent upon the government system is not a good way for us to look for our future?
Well, the black race has been dependent on the government for so long now, probably about two generations. It's going to be very difficult for them to get out of it en masse.
So how you gonna go and walk yourself into the gas chamber and not know it when people are telling you that they're turning on gas?
Well,
you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, but it's a psychological thing with black people.
I don't care how psychological it is. When do you recondition yourself to find out that the people that your political policies are getting ready to kill you and all of your people?
Yeah. Well, that's what's happening.
Yeah, Tracy, I sent you that thing that Condoleezza Rice said about that, correct?
Yes, you did. And I put it on my Facebook page, and folks about blew her away and me too.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I got it up here so I could read it again in case Philly didn't get it. But if you are taught bitterness and anger, then you will believe you are a victim. You will feel aggrieved, and the twin brother aggrievement is entitlement. So now you think you're owed something and you don't have to work for it. And now you're a really bad road to nowhere because there are people who will play to that sense of victimhood, aggrievement, and entitlement, and you still won't have a job. Philly, that's what our community has for the last 4 or 5 decades with the entitlement or victimhood or aggrievement. And the people that take advantage, that's the Democratic Party that's taking advantage of it. Because if you think for 50 years we've been trying the same thing, it's not working.
Right.
I go back to my hood right now, and the same people that were living in the Section 8 housing, it's now like a generational thing.
Then when you look at the state of Ohio, let's look at how white Democrats truly vote in the state of Ohio. How is it you go all the way down the list, but your incumbent judge at the bottom of the list still can't get elected? Remember, they swept the whole state a couple years ago, from Ken Blackwell all the way down, except for Mark Dan, who was running against a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't Mark Dan. It was
It was not Mark Dan.
Yvette. She's the one who was running with Judge. I'm talking about she was running against Mary Taylor for auditor.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
How in the
McGee
world?
Brown?
No.
McGee Brown.
McGee Brown was a judge who ran this past time, who lost she lost to someone else. She was the incumbent Supreme Court judge who lost.
She lost to O'Sullivan.
Right. So tell me, how is it that they still can't vote for a black judge statewide in the state of Ohio, but they can vote for Barack Obama at the top of the ticket? And we think that we have inclusion here in the state of Ohio, yet they go after John Husted and call him a racist because of voter suppression. Are we not looking at this?
That 2006 election was real eye-opening because Ken lost, almost 60-40?
The
other two black candidates that were Democrats lost by the same amount. There was one for judge, and then the one went for treasurer, I think.
For auditor against Mary
for
Taylor. Because remember, Mary Taylor was the only one that won. Yeah, I just want to understand how disingenuous this ranting about race and politics, and how we're not moving ahead, you know, that we think that we are. Because you cannot have every urban setting in America look the way it looks, especially where black people live, and then have it all be Democrat and think that you're winning at this. Because when you look at Detroit, when you look at Philadelphia, when you look at New York, when you look at Columbus, Cleveland, Youngstown, it all is the same where black people live. You know your neighborhood, you know your schools, you know your demographics, and you're all losing. But you're blaming someone else who should not be blamed.
I read in Mitt Romney's book, No Apology, that he believes that black race is headed to be a permanent underclass.
They
and
are
I think
because
that,
of the politics.
And I think in the next generation, you're going to see that these other ethnic groups will start to succeed economically, yet African Americans will still be downtrodden.
But it's because of their politics. It's because of how they have positioned themselves as an underclass, and they've got to have a handout to make it. Instead of standing up on their own two feet and pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and doing what's right, not following, but leading. African Americans don't want to lead because it takes work to lead. You have to think on your own. You just can't go in there with a sheet and vote straight down party lines. And you can't be moved by somebody telling you that you have voter suppression when there is none. They manufactured voter suppression to get people out to vote for Barack Obama because people were not excited about him anymore.
Mm.
And
well,
they were paid.
In this city, they have lost. So many black businesses have closed their doors. They only have one black talk radio station that's on AM, and it's on life support financially. But there are practically no blacks that own businesses in this city, yet they have a black mayor and a black chief of police. Most of the businesses, like I said, are owned by Asian or Hispanic people.
And the reason that is because they're willing to do what's necessary, but no one wants to look at why that you've lost your media outlet. Inside of the reason why African Americans have lost their media outlet was because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was a Bill Clinton thing. But they love him.
Uh-oh.
They fall in love with this man, and they follow him into demise. And when you don't have communication, when you leave your communication to one person who's being bought by a party, such as Tom Joyner and Michael Basden, you lose. I do not agree with the socialist aspect of Tata Smiley and Cornel West. But I do agree that you need to start holding people accountable and thinking on your own, because this brother is taking us down a Primrose path that's going absolutely nowhere. And no one, you cannot go up a whole percentage point of unemployment the week before election and then stand in line 5 hours to vote for a man.
We did.
Come on. And never question him about what he's doing. Right now, I'm reading an article, and when I take my break, I'll come back and go to it. I guess, Blair, you were telling me it's not global warming anymore. It's what?
It's not global
climate
warming.
Change.
It's climate change.
Well,
so
climate change.
Everything.
So climate change is going to change anyhow. It's been changing since the beginning of the evolving since the beginning of the world, if I'm not mistaken. But it says the White House now announces $6 billion to promote clean energy in Asia. It says the White House announced the federal government will spend $6 billion over the next 4 years for sustainable energy in the future, a plan with Asian countries that involves loaning tax dollars to other countries to increase their purchasing power for U.S. technology services and equipment.
The problem is we don't make any of them, Tracy.
So what are we talking about?
We giving them money to do to buy it from China, because that's where the stuff's coming from right there.
So we're giving money to China to produce it in China, so China doesn't do anything but make money while we actually just spend ours because we owe it to them anyhow. Am I reading that right?
Doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's a spot for renewables in our energy pie, but we definitely shouldn't be spending it over in Malaysia.
So
isn't that
why
where
we,
he's at right now?
Let's see where he is. Yeah. Cambodia.
Cambodia, Myanmar, and all that. Yeah.
It says Obama is in Cambodia on his final leg of his three-country tour in Southeast Asia, recognizing that the energy and the environment are among the most pressing issues confronting our region. President Obama, in partnership with Sultan Haji Hasino, and the President of the Republic of Indonesia, today proposed the U.S.-Asia Pacific Comprehensive Partnership for Sustainable Energy Future. And they have not tied Marcellus and Utica Shell into that. I just thought I'd bring that up. Where they tell me we've got enough energy underneath our feet to provide energy for the next 100 years. That we could actually tell OPEC to kick rocks and run if we would just go ahead and mine and do it responsibly and find innovative ways to bring this gas and this wet gas out of our feet, bring it to the surface and use it.
We tell OPEC and South America, if we just finish the Keystone Pipeline up in Canada, we got enough oil between the up there, the Balkans, what's out there, and what's underneath the Ohio. We don't need anybody's oil.
Well, the reason why they have all this regulation, because global warming is an accepted theory in the scientific community when it comes to meteorology.
That's not true. That was a couple scientists that in the science, and I'm a my degree's in biology. You know, you come up with a theory, and then you come up with a hypothesis to prove that, and then you do scientific methods to acceptable practices to either prove or disprove. That is a global warming. If you want to see what affects our climate and global warming, get up early in the morning. It rises in the east, and if you're not an early riser, you'll see it set in the west in the evening. The sun and the solar activity affects that. Man has very, very little to do with the environment. And if you there was no industry back in the day when the dinosaurs went out. You know what I mean? It's always been something. Before it was the ozone, and before that it was something else. You know, acid rain. It's always something. And if you look at it, it was people that were looking to make big money, like Al Gore. And if you look at who was going to do these carbon credits, Tracy, it was set up at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Hey, listen, let me take my break. I'll be right back. Number is 347-945-5229. It is open mic. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
WF.
You still there, Philly?
And friends.
Yeah.
News Talk
yeah.
600.
Climate
WSOM.
Was a big false.
Israeli Prime
Good.
Minister.
And then
like Palestinian Authority. And Egyptian leaders.
When global warming was just proof that the Earth and its temperatures actually been cooling for the last 15 years.
In order to draw attention to what they consider to be low wages
and
expensive health benefits. This employee is on the fence.
I don't know if
it was all about money.
My morals are just go with my need to have an income at the moment.
Some shoppers say they are sympathetic to the cause of the employees, but it's not going to keep them out of the stores. I'll allow Dora the Explorer Guitar, dragster cars with tiny wheels, and desktop magnets made the cut this year. They're on the U.S. Public Interest Group's annual list of dangerous toys. The group wants stricter testing, in particular for toys with small, round objects, which can be a choking hazard.
An empty toilet paper roll. If a toy fits in this tube, it is too small for a child under 3.
U.S. Perg's Nasima Hussain. A big loss for a computer giant.
Hewlett Packard says a British company that it purchased last year lied.
Thank you. Hello?
Yeah,
the person who's good in biology. What's your name? It's Stanley here.
Yeah. The comment he was making is that he felt that there were other theories about weather change.
Yeah, but
that had come previously to global warming.
He made a comment that's completely wrong. I want to go. What's the name of the person who did a study in biology who has a degree in biology?
It was another man that spoke on the phone, but he was saying the point he was trying to make is that he believed that global warming was a hypothesis.
Yes,
based
a
on the scientific method, and that it wasn't a proven fact of weather change.
Okay, maybe that's true, but he went completely wrong. At first, we do hypothesis, then we test it, and then it becomes a fact, and then it becomes a theory. A theory is the highest thing there is in science. When you do a theory, that means it's been proven. Like the theory of evolution, the theory of gravity, the theory of quantum physics. That's the highest level.
Well, the actual chain is hypothesis, theory, and law. And most people accept the law of gravity.
Theory explains the law. Theory is, but the law is after, and the theory explains the law. The theory is the highest.
No. Well, actually, the chain of events is hypothesis, theory, and then law. Now, currently, evolution is still a theory because there are gaps in the fossil record.
No, it's not. Go to any scientific person, go to any person in science, he will tell you the theory is the highest one.
No, sir, theory is not the highest one. Law is the highest one.
Do a research on the Google if you don't believe me. Go, what is it?
Law is the highest, sir, the law, scientific laws are the highest degree of proof, sir.
It's not.
Scientific laws, namely the law of gravity, thermodynamics, those are scientific laws.
No, it's not.
A scientific theory is not the same thing as a scientific law. Those are two different things.
No, the theory is the highest one. When somebody says, I'm doing
a scientific theory is not the highest level of proof, sir. That's not true.
Scientific person, highest.
No, scientific theory is not the highest level of scientific proof.
Why don't you don't believe
scientific
me?
Law is the highest level of scientific proof.
Believe me, just do a search on Google and see it.
Well, sir, I'm not in front of a PC, but I know scientific law is the highest level of scientific proof.
I know that for a fact. I'm telling you you're wrong. I know this.
I'm not wrong, sir. I'm not wrong.
I could bring you the website and everything about theory that will explain you exactly what it is. It's the highest.
A scientific law is the highest level of proof.
The theory
comes before a law.
It's the highest qualification for the thing.
No, theory is not the highest qualification, sir.
Yes, it is. Yes,
theory
it
is not the highest qualification.
Yes, it is. Do a research and ask. You want me to send you the link? I have no problem sending you the link.
Sir, I'm not in front of a PC. I don't need to see the link. What I'm saying to you is I know what the different classifications are. It's from hypothesis, theory, law.
No, you're telling me things that you don't know. Show me the things.
I'm telling you exactly what I do know.
No, you don't.
And law and scientific law is the highest level of scientific proof.
That doesn't tell you that. I could show you a link in 2.5 seconds. You can't.
Have you ever heard of the law of thermodynamics, the law of gravity? Those are scientific laws. Those are not theories.
It's not the law. The law explains what it is. The theory explains how it works in the law.
What I suggest you do is go back and pick up a physics book or pick up a chemistry book and look at what scientific laws are. Under chemistry and physics. Those are scientific laws that are expressed in most chemistry texts and most textbooks on physics.
Send you the link, yes or no? Because you're talking, we're both talking, and you don't want to know the truth. I have no problem in saying
I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you what the truth is. A theory is not law.
Send me a link about it.
A scientific theory is not a scientific law. Those are two different things.
It's not.
Evolution is still a theory. It is not a scientific law.
It has
not meet the criterion of being a scientific law.
It has been proven. It's not a theory. It has been proven
in certain circumstances, but it has not been proven. It has not been proven in a universal sense.
For scientists. You go to any scientist and tell you evolution is...
Evolution has not been proven in a universal sense. That's why it doesn't qualify to be a scientific law.
You don't know evolution. You don't know at all what it is.
I know exactly what evolution is.
true? You haven't read? Talk to me about the DNA they've proven how evolution is right. Talk to me about that. Do you know
about
that?
I know about the...
No, do you know about that? That DNA proved that evolution is right. Do you know about that? Yes
well,
or no? Do you know
if you're
about
talking that? About the double helix, and if you're talking about the base pairs of A, C, G,
that's one
and,
of the
and T, and how the base pairs match up, and if you want to look at the DNA between humans and primates and the similarities between DNA of human and primates, that's all been proven to be the case. But the theory of evolution, that there's a clear line of descent between primates and humans, that has not been fully proven.
Do you know the DNA, the proof of DNA? I'm asking the question, yes or no? Do you know the proof of the DNA?
Evolution is still considered to be a scientific theory, sir. It is not a law.
Know it and find out about it. I didn't know it before. I don't know. Do you know the proof of DNA, yes or no?
I know about the structure of DNA, that DNA is a double helix. I know what the base pairs and DNA are, namely adenine, thymine, guanine, and how the base pairs match up. So I know about DNA in that sense. I know about the hydrogen bonds in DNA.
That's not the proof of the DNA. You're talking about something that you don't know. That's not the proof of DNA at all.
The only thing in terms of DNA and the way they compare DNA to the primate DNA, the similarities between the base pairs in human DNA and primate DNA are very similar, and the structure is very similar.
Oh,
but as far as the line of descent between primates and people who are humans, that,
sir,
there's not a clear line of descent.
Can I step in?
Go ahead.
In modern science, the term theory refers to scientific theories, a well-confirmed type of explanation of nature, made in a way consistent with scientific method and fulfilling the criteria required by modern science. Such theories are described in such a way that any scientist in the field is in a position to understand and either provide empirical support or empirically contradict.
Yeah,
scientific theories are... I'm reading you this. You asked for it, I'm giving it to you.
I have it here. I have it in front of
Scientific theories are the most reliable, rigorous, and comprehensive form of science knowledge, in contrast to more common uses of the word theory that imply that something is unproven or speculative. Scientific theories are also distinguished from hypotheses, which are individual, empirically testable conjectures or scientific laws. Scientific laws which are descriptive accounts of how nature will behave under certain conditions. So, I mean, it doesn't say which is more, but other than that science, the theory is what generally most scientists, if you say this is a theory, they can either prove it or disprove it with acceptable practices.
Larry,
scientific law is basically
it takes a lot to disprove a theory. Trust me. It's like the theory of gravity, the theory of quantum physics, the theory of evolution, the theory of... There's many theories.
Nobody said it's easy or hard. I'm just saying it's a theory.
Theory is done over tests and a lot of tests. Done over a lot of scientific people that basically wants to... Basically, they want to do everything in their power to prove that you're wrong. That's what science
basically,
does.
Hold on, guys. I'll go on you because you and I have had this conversation on global warming. You come up with a hypothesis that man is creating global warming, and then you test that hypothesis, and you come up with things or data that disprove that. You don't throw that data away or fudge it to come up to meet you. You have just disproved your hypothesis.
And I agree with that part. That part I agree with you.
Guys,
got a question for you. I love the conversation, but my question is, have they been able to prove that man is creating global warming?
No. That's why they changed
the thing. I don't think so.
It was first called warming. Basically, man was causing global warming. Guess what? The data didn't support that. That's why you have the famous hockey stick. Those guys, those few scientists, which were part of the UN, it was the International Panel on Climate Change. Those guys fudged the numbers. And then anybody that dissented with them, they would call the peer review process, they would get them none of their stuff published. So you've already, as a scientist, lost all your credibility. You tested it with scientific models, and then it didn't come out how you wanted, so you fudged the numbers. They also did stuff like, Tracy, when you're putting out these things to gather the temperature, right?
Right.
The temperature in a city is going to be higher than out in the field up in Trumbull County because you have blacktop and concrete and everything like that. So what these guys did, they saw that the trending number was actually going down, so then they put more of these data collecting stations in urban settings, or what they would call some of them they actually put on top of heating units. You know what I mean? So they fudged the data to come up with what they had hypothesized. And that automatically, boom, you're done. You've lost all credibility in the scientific world. And it's not a consensus. It was a consensus between those guys. And like I said, they set up the place to trade these carbon credits in Barack Obama's hometown of Chicago, the Chicago Merchandise Exchange. And it folded. And Gore, you know, so then they started changing. It's not called global warming now. It's called climate change. Because now it's climate change, you can blame everything. They blame Sandy on climate change. They blame Katrina on climate change.
But climate climate change is going to happen no matter what, if I'm not mistaken.
Man doesn't have anything to do with it.
So
and
why
if,
is
if man does, it's a minute amount.
So if that be the case, and I do believe that man needs to care for the earth. A man needs to care for the land in which we live. I believe that with my
heart.
So why is it that we are only looking at that which we have our constituents going after and not going after all forms of energy? And we are demonizing coal and we're demonizing Marcellus and Utica Shale.
It all goes back to the comment back in 08 when Obama was talking to Joe the plumber and he told him he wants to spread the wealth around. This is to bring us, our standard of living down. Because China, India, none of them people are buying into this climate change. China's building a new coal-fired electric plant, one a week, and have been and will continue to do. They're buying the coal that we won't use anymore here in the United States. So they're not giving up their competitive advantage of lower utility because the manufacturing base and the reason that we became such a huge manufacturer is because we had access to cheap and abundant resources for our power.
So hold on, Larry. I got another question to go on with that because my question, I got to go back to President Obama and the China people and the $6 billion and the deficit. And we're paying for stuff that we can't afford to pay for, but yet we're going to pay for it because we're going to help Southeast Asia. But I don't see coal a part of this industry, and I don't see Marcellus and Utica Shale a part of this. And I need to know how we are going to make sure that where we live here in the Mahoning Valley, we cultivate that which we have so we can build our infrastructure here.
I think what you're going to see, Tracy, is they're going to try to do the EPA and implement the EPA to do all this hydraulic fracking that's going on, right? And if that happens, you will have some – because that, now you're stepping on a state's right. The state of Ohio and Governor Kasich has every right to utilize his natural resources here in the state, just like North Dakota is. But now the EPA is going to step in and say, hey, you ain't allowed to do that. Now you're going to have problems with the federal government stepping on states' rights. That would be a huge one.
So the federal government steps on states because right now I'm looking at them trying to demonize Governor Kasich already because they've already started their gubernatorial racist mess already.
Right.
They got to keep this momentum going for the next 2 years, and they haven't even put up a person who's going to run.
Anything they can do, anything that they can do to delay that, because I'm telling you, Tracy, I've seen the metrics. What you said, it's 100 years. There's enough oil underneath the Ohio side, just on that Utica.
Right.
Enough oil, we don't need to import a thing from Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, nowhere for the next 200 years.
So we're going to play with the people and their minds so that we can play our political game, so that no matter what, we win and they lose, and we don't care if the people get what they need to get at all. Because right now I watched gas go up in the last 2 weeks, at least almost, what, 50 cents?
Yeah, nobody's screaming, hollering, are they?
I don't understand. When I drove to New Jersey this past weekend, I was paying $3.59 a gallon.
This all plays into the thing as far as the colonialism and all the stuff. I mean, that 2016 really was an eye-opener. And let you know, and I liked it because it didn't use – he used what the president wrote in his book and then talked to people that – the president's family and got into his thinking. I mean, he truly – it was a good movie, good documentary, and – not enough people saw it because they don't understand what's coming.
But if they, but see, and Larry, you brought up, you know, you brought up 2016. Atlas Shrugged too. The host is the hostess Twinkie thing is really a hostess shrugged.
Yes.
It really, really is. Are we not paying? Because see, I think we have gotten, and I listened to a guy by the name of Mr. Ossible this morning, and I brought it up a little bit earlier today. We have gotten into this political thing as a football game. And a football game, when win or lose, you don't have anything at stake. It is a form of entertainment. And we've turned our politics into a I won, you lost. And that's not what politics, that's not what this is. This is not a game of I win, you lose. This is a game of I'm giving you my power and the sovereignty to take my vote and my power and give it to you to do the right thing. And I don't think people are paying attention to the politics that are being played behind this political choice we've made.
It comes back to the same thing I told you again, the election. A lot of Americans support Trump, Republican.
See, but
that has some leader that has something to prove.
Say that again.
We don't trust them. We don't trust them.
Listen. Stanley. Listen to what I just said. When we vote, this is not about I win, you lose. This
is
about.
Stanley, it is not.
Tracy,
it is more than this, because when the last 8 years, and sorry, we're going to come back again to the last 8 years, but George
Stanley,
was the president. We didn't hear any of you do what you're doing right now.
Stanley,
none of you. When the last 8 years, we told you that I lied to you about war. We didn't hear you any saying.
Stanley,
it's normal that we're supposed.
You don't listen. I said in politics, it is not about I win, you lose. It's about I've given, because of the power of the vote, I've given my sovereignty over to you to do something. And you're going to run it in the way, the direction that you think you're going to run it. The question is, will we lose or will we win based upon who we gave our power to? That's what the issue. The issue is truly. And so my question is, listen, when Mitt Romney, when he lost his election the other day, I did not lose because of it. You have to understand, this is not a football game. So now the question is, how do I make sure that whatever decisions that this president makes are going to be in the best interest of all that are included in America? That's the issue. The issue is not about me losing. I'm not playing. This is not an entertainment sport. This is about my livelihood and where and what direction this country goes into.
I know, and I agree with you with that.
And so I'm not. What I'm saying is, now the question is, how do we hold this man accountable? 407, I think that's Alex. It's you. You.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon, Alex.
You know, I wanted to. I think that was Pianki talking about all the fuel we have under our feet here in the United States and all that stuff.
No, that was Larry.
Oh, okay.
Good question. Am I on speakerphone?
Yes. Yes, Tracy.
Somebody got to take me off the speaker because I got a bad feedback. Okay.
Is this better?
That's better.
Right here?
That's better.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think it's important for us not to get played by the corporate interests, because we have to remember that they tend to play both sides. And this is by the energy companies. We can't get played by them and by the bankers, because if you do a little bit of digging, you'll find out that, you know, the people or the interest that's most heavily invested in energy, especially oil, is the big bankers like Goldman Sachs and Chase and things like that. But what I want to point out is that there's a very good reason for them not to, why the energy companies do not want to dig or do mining here in the United States. It's kind of like if you keep an artificial perception of scarcity, then you can keep the prices high. And that's, you know, just like for any market, it's the same thing that, I don't want to call them out by name, but certain groups do the same thing with diamonds. They artificially create they artificially create a scarcity of it and actually pay the Russians so that they don't put their diamonds on the market, because the Russians could wipe out the entire diamond market if they wanted to, but they don't, because they could flood the market with diamonds. But the thing about it is that it's the same thing with the oil, and so they don't want to start drilling here until they absolutely have to, until, you know, everybody else runs out, until Venezuela's tapped out, Saudi Arabia's tapped out, Kuwait, Iraq, you know, maybe even Iran, you know, if they could get back, if they ever get back in there, you know. And I think that's really the goal, and I think that, you know, they're playing us against each other by, you know, they're playing Republicans, because they got them, you know, fiddling to this tune about, oh, we got all this fuel here, and you know, it just keeps us divided and not focused on the real agenda for this country that the elite have, you know, that about over control. And you know, I just think we're just in this particular issue when it comes to energy, we're all getting played right now, because it's not about, if they wanted to start, you know, mining here, they would, but they don't want to, because they want to keep the prices artificially high. They want to keep that scarcity, or at least the perception of scarcity in the market, so that they can continue to make, you know, ridiculous profits.
Tracy?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's right in a point. What you'll have happen, let's say all that oil we were drilling and doing, it's all pumping out of there. OPEC will just lower their production, and prices will stay high. But here's the thing. We won't be beholden to them any longer, where they threaten us to stop our economy by not providing it. I'm telling you, I've seen it. The thumping trucks went all over East Liverpool, out in the sticks there in Columbiana County. The thump trucks come out there, and they had geologists out there. And I've seen the paychecks that these guys are cashing, the landowners. I've also seen the new businesses springing up. There is oil under there. The oil refinery right across the river from Wellsville, Ohio, where my father works, they are going through a turnaround right now where they're going to go from being able to refine 22,000 barrels a day to 35. They were going to do that in 2015. They're doing it now. So the oil is there. And they want to drill it because it's easier to put it on market right here. You know, they can refine it right there. What won't get refined will go right down the Ohio River to Vicksburg, Mississippi, down there to the Mississippi River. So the oil is here. But we will stop it if we let the EPA get in there and start talking about that. They've been doing this fracking and drilling for the last 60 years. They haven't had any water contamination, because you got to remember, they're going way down, sometimes 5, 6 miles below.
A whole lot further down than the water table.
What? Yes, exactly.
Well,
so,
yeah, we also have to. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The oil is here. The difference between Pennsylvania and West Virginia in the Marcellus play is that's just straight natural gas. Over in the Utica, where we're at in Ohio, you got natural gas. You got what they call wet gas, which is the oil and some of the other stuff that comes out of there that can be used in other things. That's why you see the big crackling plant, they call it, that's going up in Beaver. Now, that company was going out of business. They're moving to Brazil, a company called Horsehead. But it was right on the river. It's got rail access. There'll be 4,000 jobs there in the next two, three years. High-paying jobs, too, not some McDonald's jobs. You're talking about $70,000, $80,000 just to start. So the stuff is happening or going to happen, but we can't put the brakes on it. And that's what you saw this president do with the Keystone Pipeline. He put the brakes on it, said, we'll deal with the Keystone Pipeline after the election. So what you have is you got a pipeline that starts right on Texas right now and goes to the plant, but there's no oil coming into it because the oil has to come from Canada.
You know, I'm not convinced that, you know, I know that you want to blame Obama for that, but, you know, I'm not convinced it would be any different even if somebody else was in office, even if Romney was in office. I just think that it's the interest of the energy companies to keep it that way. I mean, they didn't want the pipeline.
That's not true. Obama stopped that. Obama stopped the Keystone Pipeline. That's a fact. That's what he said. He said, we'll talk about finishing it after the election.
Why after the election?
Because he doesn't have to answer to the voters anymore, Tracy. It's just like what he did with Putin.
No.
He didn't actually say it to Putin. He said it to Medvedev, the president. He says, you tell Putin that I need a little room here. After this election, this is the last time, this is my last election, I'll have some more flexibility. Flexibility means he doesn't have to answer to us anymore. And real leaders don't do that. Real leaders don't tell other leaders, hey, give me some time to deal with my people, and then once I do that, I'll come back and we'll acquiesce or do what you want. No, real leaders make decisions, good or bad. They make their decisions and stick by them.
So real leaders don't lie to their people and then cover up what they're saying also, huh?
So what are you talking about?
Are you talking about Benghazi?
No, I'm talking about George Bush. So.
But you want to keep on going back to George Bush.
No, but
my question is...
I'm tired of us going always back to Obama like he's the worst thing and the evil thing in the world when the guy said... George, the Republican, you didn't do better.
George Bush is gone.
Yeah.
Obama is
today.
You
can't go back to George Bush. George Bush is gone.
The guy that just said that, did Obama kill the Keystone Pipeline until after the election? Is that what he said, or are you calling me a liar?
No, I'm not calling you a liar. I'm not calling you that, but you're saying leader is this, and I'm coming back to you. Well, a true leader is not somebody who lies also, and I could come back with George Bush.
But my question is, why do you keep...
That wasn't true.
But see, listen, Bush
lied about me.
Okay, so if you want to go lie, let's go with lie. Let's look at your record as a government, as president, as Republican. Let's go to our record as Democrat. Trust me, you wouldn't be proud also.
My question is, why do we keep on going back to Bush when Bush was out? Bush's been out for years now.
If we don't do that, then let's say next president becomes a president of Republicans. Suddenly, all Republicans are going to act like, oh, nothing happened. We're almighty, and then we're going to come Democrat and say, no, you're not.
But my question is, why do we keep on
Obama
going
Obama
acting like
Obama's
going to be the end of the world?
Obama did that.
Go ahead, Alex.
Do you really think it would be different if Romney was in there? I don't think, like, if you have to really look at the forces that's at play. Obama is a puppet, and any Republican that will be in there will be a puppet too. If the energy companies don't want the Keystone Pipeline, it wouldn't matter if Romney or Obama was in there. I mean, I understand that it falls on Obama, but if we're going to focus on that, I mean, really, I mean, you're getting played then because you're not thinking – you can't see the forest for the from the trees then.
Alice, but this is my issue. In a representative government in which we are supposed to be, that we are not, I agree that whether it be Obama, whether it be Romney, we are being played by a lot. But my question is, because see, now I can't blame Romney for what's going on, because Romney's still licking wounds and he's really still ticked off because he lost. So I can't do nothing with Romney. But I know that President Obama right now, I know what's going on here in Ohio, and I see them setting up the governor of Ohio for fall. They're blaming racism on Kasich, like he had something to do with the presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. And right now where we are, we have so much gas, Utica shale, wet gas, and coal, that we could run the country for the next 100 years. And from my understanding, the next boom is going to be energy. So how in the world, what do I do to prepare ourselves here in the Mahoning Valley as well as across this globe? Because energy is used by everything, especially when I'm paying $3.59 a gallon for gasoline. We are in a situation over in the Middle East that is a powder keg getting ready to explode. We are right now, we are so in debt that if we start using our resources, we could pull down some of the national debt. I believe that. And not be beholden to other countries that do not like us. And right now we're playing games with everybody because nobody understands anything I just said.
You know, I think that, I don't think the debt is ever going to get paid down. I mean, to be honest, it's just not. There's no way you can pay it down. I mean, we're playing. I think that's just another game that we're playing to keep us in debt and keep us spinning our wheels on something that can't change unless you change the fundamental monetary policy. And nobody serious is talking about that. So my eyes glaze over any time people talk about paying down the deficit when that's impossible to do. It's mathematically impossible to do. I mean, you get all your money from one house, the Fed, and then when they give it to you, you got to pay them back plus interest. And they're the only people printing the money, so it's impossible. I mean, it's just another one of those things to keep us busy talking instead of focusing on what's really going on, the interest, the power brokering that's going on, in this country. When it comes to the energy, how can Mahoning Valley, get in a strategic position to take advantage of that? I mean, it's very difficult if you have a overbearing EPA. And part of that is, it may be counterintuitive, but the EPA is, lobbied to by energy companies and by bankers because that's what they want. People don't realize that regulations hurt small businesses. And so that's the very point. These big energy companies, they actually lobby to the EPA or to congressmen to pass regulations for them so that small guys in Mahoning Valley can never get on their feet, can never get everything together to be in, actually get into business. But then a big guy comes in and is able to do it, snap his fingers and get it done, because they have the resources. So I think you have to tackle that. I think you have to tackle that. I mean, it's not so much Obama, but you have to tackle those lobbying interests in our government that will fund the EPA and give them more, give them more regulations to carry out and things like that.
Hold on.
I mean, all these problems come back to lobbying, corporate interests, and government.
843, your mic is on. 843.
Oh, hey, Tracy.
Hey, how are you?
Talking
to
me that way.
I wasn't sure, but I got another.
You remember my area code.
Hi, South Carolina.
How y'all doing?
Good.
I'm loving it here.
Where?
In South Carolina.
Oh, man, go back to the conversation. They'll be going crazy. Now you're coming in like Steve. Hold on. 724, your mic is on.
Thanks, Tracy. That guy was talking just a little bit ago. I think he's confusing the thing. Again, he said that we can't pay down our deficit. That's incorrect. We most certainly can. We've done it before. Now, the debt, $16 trillion, we'll never pay that down. You're exactly right. And there's a difference. There's a deficit that's a fiscal year. The fiscal year runs from October 1st to September 30th of the following year. We have control over that. The reason that we've ran trillion-dollar deficits these last 4 years is because we're not operating on a budget. Our elected congressmen and senators have not passed any budget in Obama's first 4 years. 2 years under Nancy Pelosi, 2 years under Harry Reid. Not one budget has been passed. Matter of fact, the budgets that were submitted by the president didn't even get a Democratic senator or congressman to support it. So our deficits we can fix. If you look at it, there's a pie. Out of that pie, the only things that you can really cut without really killing everybody is defense and our discretionary funding, our discretionary spending. Some of our discretionary spending is like what Mitt Romney talked about with PBS, but nobody wanted to hear about Big Bird, right?
Wait a minute. Big Bird. They don't understand that Big Bird is a billion-dollar industry all by himself.
All by itself. Why are we giving him $30 billion a year then?
Because at the time that it was actually in, we did not have a national cable network where you could watch TV across the country.
Right, but the times have changed. So, you know, Big Bird, I appreciate it. Thanks for your thing, but you can stand alone on your own. Same thing. There's and the discretionary spending is if those are the only two things you can cut, because the two biggest pieces of the pie are Medicaid and Social Security, right? And nobody wants to be pushing grandma off the thing or doing. So if you can't touch the two biggest pieces, which account for 49% of all of our spending, then you have to look at the other one, which is defense and discretionary, because the rest of the pie, about 6% of our national spending, is just on interest on the debt, that $16 trillion of debt we got. The rest of it is mandatory spending. So the only two pieces of the pie that anybody's willing to look at is defense, and you can cut defense. There's going to be some consequences, but you can cut defense. The consequences
what
is
about the-
now some of those like Raytheon and defense contractors, they're going to lay off people. That's going to affect an economy like Lima, Ohio, that makes the A1 Abrams tank. Now you cut defense spending on that A1 Abrams, Lima's going to and Ohio's going to hurt. So we're at the point now where the cuts that you're going to make, Big Bird ain't going to hurt, but that ain't going to get us to where we need to be.
But you got
to
realize that the electorate was stuck on Big Bird because, remember, you have to understand President Obama got elected by going on to The View and David Letterman and those type of television programs, which are people who have no idea who the Speaker of the House is.
Right.
So we have to understand that the electorate today is so ignorant, they don't have a clue. So who Susan Rice is a Rice Krispie. They have no clue who these people are that we're talking about. And we kept them ignorant, so they have no idea. And so a lot of this is just foreign to, everyday people. And we've made them that way. So what we're talking about now, is very, very deep for them because they have no clue about what we're really saying. And it affects their daily life because, Alex, I think the deficit can come down based upon us using our own natural resources and capitalizing them and exporting them to the rest of the world.
Now,
let's look at the oil prices there because the guy was talking about how oil companies or the energy companies are making big money. When the refiner, and I don't care who it is, whether it's Ergon, Quaker State, Shell, Pennzoil, whoever, when they refine that gas, they make about 7 cents on the gallon. Because it costs a lot of money to make gasoline, a lot of money in electric, a lot of money in payroll. So they make 7 cents a gallon that they sell. But how much does the state of Ohio and the federal government make on taxes per gallon?
Oh, we make a whole bunch, and right now we're having a hard time with our transportation because our transportation, our roads, are tied into our gasoline tax, and the more car, more fuel efficient our cars are, the less
yes.
money we're making for our roads.
Yes, and that's what I said. When you make a decision, okay, I'm going to cut spending, there is consequences. Just like it was a good idea, this cash for clunkers. We're going to jumpstart the auto industry and get our cars more fuel efficient, but now the gas tax revenue come in way under what it's normally, and now they're going to tax you on per mile driven, right? So what
that's
did
what
you
I hear.
Save? Yeah. So what did you save by buying a hybrid like I got? If they're going to tax you by the mile, you know what I mean? I'm trying to save on gasoline, and I am, but now you're going to tax me on the mile too.
That means they can get you twice.
Yeah, it's the thing. There's all kinds of, when a law happens, like Obamacare had great intentions, but look at the consequences that it did. So was it, in the grand scheme of things, Obamacare has hurt, actually, more than it's helped. Yeah, if you're under 26, you can stay on your parents' thing. Yes, now you have, if you had pre-existing conditions, right, you can get insurance. But look at the consequences. Businesses are laying off people wholesale because they have to abide by it. And my thing is, if Obamacare was so good, then how come so many waivers were granted to everybody? Right? I mean, why would you exclude a certain portion, and most of them was in Nancy Pelosi's district, but why exclude them if it was the great thing? Then everybody should be able to have to do it. Not just the people that supported you, because a lot of them were labor unions that had Cadillac plans that were going to get taxed big time, but they were excluded. And
don't
so that's
that.
Where I say, yeah, I mean, that's the truth. And so the caller there says, we was talking about Bush. Bush didn't do that. Obama did. Bush is gone. He's living down in Texas now.
We ain't heard hide no hair from him. You know, we threw him under the bus and rolled over him. He didn't even pop up his head during the election.
Yeah, you don't hear nothing about it. Yeah, so I'm only the guy won. I didn't vote for him, but he's my president. So now I got to hold him accountable for what he did and what he said he was going
to
do.
And that's why I go back to saying that when you look at really this, you know, when you a football game says the Cleveland Browns won. And that's my team. Whether they win or lose, I don't lose anything from it. But when you vote for a president, you're not voting for a football game. You're voting for a future. And when whoever wins or whoever loses, you don't win or lose. You've got to hold them accountable and make sure that they don't take you over a cliff.
And another thing about this, what I'm noticing.
Whoa. I've got a. Okay. Alex went into a thunderstorm. Go ahead, South Carolina.
What I'm finding out here now is it's not just the news media and what they're reporting, is they actually control the content. And because I'm looking at this whole Susan Rice thing, and it's really disturbing because I'm hearing one story one place, and another story someplace else. I mean, if that be the case with this woman, when it was so blatantly clear what happened with her, I mean, what else have they told us that's not right? You know, what else have they told us is not true? You know, they control
time.
The information, and they control the media.
This
now, it's just kind of like what Jeff says. You know, Jeff says it all the time. You got your progressive on the right, you got your progressive on the left. You know, same ideology, same thought pattern. It's just a matter of how are we going to get there and what we're going to be when we get there.
Yeah. I don't think we understand it. I think we're losing it. Bill just put in, we pay 46 cents per gallon in tax in Ohio. And 52.4 cents for diesel. I don't think we are understanding what's really going on here and how this is affecting our future. You know what I'm saying? We're not playing well with others. And the American electorate, because of their ignorance, they are not really engaged into every decision. There's a cost to it. Every decision, there's a cost to it. You know, I want to talk about minimum wage, and they don't understand that when minimum wage, when the wages go up, there's a cost to it. And the businessman is not paying, but you are.
Hey, Tracy.
Yeah, Alex.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was going through an engine room. I want to touch back on what you're saying. You think, like you're saying, that you could pay down the debt if we drill here or do whatever we need to do here. You know, the thing about that is that what people don't realize is, I mean, we're talking about like the deficit and all this, but nobody talks about the interest that the government has to pay on every dollar that it prints. We're not talking about that, and this is why I say people don't really understand why it can't be paid down. I mean, it's like a bad credit card. I need you to explain this in layman's terms.
So what you're saying is this is like a bad credit card when your interest rate is so high that even when you pay a dollar, you only get 10 cents towards the principal?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
It's essentially, yes. And so there's no way to – it doesn't matter. We can pass a balanced budget amendment and all this stuff, but as long as – we're paying $40 million every hour just in interest to the Fed on the money that we print. And that was like, you know, 8 years ago. It's higher now. But it was $40 million an hour 8 years ago. As long as that's true, it's not going to happen until you change your monetary policy. And even every job that you create, even if you create an energy company, you know, have all these different domestic energy companies, every dollar that's paid into a corporation or to pay somebody their wages, it has interest with that. Where does that money come from? This is what people don't understand. Every dollar that you get in your paycheck has to be paid with interest to the Federal Reserve. This would, you know, really think about that. You know, most people can't fathom it about what that really means. You know, the perpetual servitude, slavery, that the American people are in. Let's just say, you know, okay, for that's taken care of by some miraculous reason. But you're saying that, okay, well, let's say we could start to pay it down with domestic energy generation. Here's the problem with that. Once we do that, it's like I was saying before, why the energy companies want the EPA not to do too much domestically is because once that happens and we start exporting, it will drive the cost of oil and energy way down because it just worldwide. And so then what happens then is now if you base that off of what the price is now, then yeah, you know, you get a pretty good profit and pretty much pretty good tax revenues. But when the prices start to go down worldwide, now you're talking about far less tax revenue than you thought you were going to get because you've introduced that competition into the market. It's not as straightforward, you know, as we think. We just drill and solve all of our problems. You know, it's a lot more complicated than that, you know.
Wow. Now, Larry, you got to understand I'm not the brightest pencil in this deck, but when I look at my credit card bill, you know, if anybody has a Sears card, paying Sears down, you never get them paid off. And so what
we never pay on the principal. We're only paying interest. We never pay on the principal. We haven't paid on the principal in like 20 years.
So how do we, Larry? Are you there? Did he leave? Larry, I saw him there. So how do we get out of that? Because if you're not paying, I mean, so do we really just have? Do we
you
really
have to change the monetary policy?
Right. No. My question is, do we have to, like, crash and burn?
You have to go back to the gold standard and get out of a fiat currency.
But wait a minute. Hold on. So we go to the gold standard. But right now, does anybody know you can't buy a pair of gold earrings today? You realize that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know,
I used to have gold earrings, and I can't afford gold earrings today.
Tracy, you said you was reading Richest Man in Babylon. Yeah. You say you was reading that book.
Yes, I did.
You know, so take heed to what he's saying in there. If you finished reading it, I don't know, where you need to set aside a tenth of everything you earn.
Yes.
And you need to have the mindset that a part of what I earn is mine to keep. And so what I do, what my family does,
right?
You know, we buy into a few different things, but definitely a little bit of gold bullion and a little bit of silver. And we get it home, and it goes in a safe.
No matter what.
Because that's no matter what. Just a little bit. Every month or two, you buy a little bit. Because I think an ounce of silver is like, you know, $40 or whatever.
Correct.
But and so, yeah, but that's what we do. Because the value is going to keep going up. We're about to, what people don't realize, we're about to go into a cycle with silver. Silver is about to explode. So
that's what I hear.
Yeah. And so I encourage people to buy silver. And a lot of people are saying they want to buy silver to bankrupt the J.P. Morgan Chase. And so because they have however they've strategically positioned their company there, I guess they're betting against silver or whatever. And I think for whatever reason, they need to do that. And so a lot of the free market people are just buying silver like crazy because it hurts them.
They're going to have to be careful with that, trying to corner market. They need to understand what happened to Jay Bunker Hunt. And he wound up spending some time in jail over that.
Hey, 269, your mic is on. Hello? Well, listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM. I'm going to leave the mics open so you guys can go ahead and continue to talk. And we'll see you on the other side of my break.
Everyone faces challenges.
Hey, Alex?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, I've known some folks that,
mm-hmm.
I know some people that are buying all the silver coins they can. Every last bit of it.
Right. It's because right now, because of, like, the U.S. government is distorting it right now, where, because it takes about 53 ounces of silver to equal 1 ounce of gold. But historically, if you let the market do what it's supposed to do, it should be like 16. So, and they do that partially by, you know, printing money. Well, actually, all the central banks, you know, with fiat currency, that's what they're doing. But if you look at the market conditions, they can't keep it up very long, and so it's going to creep. The value of silver is going to creep up because they're not going, printing the money just isn't helping anymore. Printing those dollars in euro, it's the value of silver is going to creep up. I mean, it can literally quadruple. It's being predicted to quadruple by 2015. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, 400%. You know, people barely, you know, get 7% on a mutual fund. You know, put their money in silver. You know, on average, you're talking, you know, just orders of magnitude of gains over what, you know, if you invested it, you know, in a,
well,
you know,
gold
a modest
will serve
mutual
as
fund.
Gold will serve as a way to barter if the value of money decreases rapidly. And silver. With gold. And silver, yeah.
And silver. Both of them. Well, I mean, I recommend buying both. I mean, I really do. Because we have to realize what money is. I mean, we don't have money in our pockets. We just have currency. That's just, you know, it's just for trade. And the trade is based off of confidence. Confidence in the dollar, but it's not money, you know.
Yeah.
So we have to realize that. So that's why I encourage everybody to I wouldn't go crazy and just buy all this stuff up, because I mean, you got to live, you got to eat, and you know, whatever. But I would definitely recommend getting some silver and gold. But silver in the short term, I mean, like in the next few years, is should give you more return than the gold. But you know, in long term, gold has always been stable. You know, and it's just like how Ron Paul pointed out that we don't really have inflation. People think, you know, the gas prices and food is going up, and if you look at the gas and then the price of gas and if you bought it in ounces of gold over the last like 10, 15 years, the price of oil, of gas, gasoline per gallon has been relatively flat. It hasn't changed. What's changing is our money is losing its value. You know,
right.
But
I recently went overseas, and the Brazilian dollar, the real, is almost at an equal level to our own dollar. The South American currencies are starting to gain strength in comparison to the American currency.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just confidence, you know. All a use of a currency is all that means is that people have confidence that government is managing its internal affairs, and that's all it means. That's all it's a measure of. You know, and so, but it's, you know, I've never heard of anybody really getting wealthy off of currency trading, you know, but I mean, some people, you can make money, but I guess maybe it's just not it's not something I would do.
But also, people don't know the story of Argentina when they went into hyperinflation, and that could happen here.
Okay.
Alex, do you think that
in your
philosophy, do you think that it would be better if we were backed up by the gold standard, if our money was backed up by the gold standard, instead of if we took out the Fed and everything?
Because then you couldn't spend greater than what you had in reserves.
Right.
And you're saying, because I'm hearing what you're saying, but you know why we decided to take out of the gold standard, because we needed money to produce more, and the gold standard has a problem also, because if we're backed up with gold and we don't have enough gold, we're done.
Yeah, like, and also what happened was the foreign countries wanted the gold instead of the dollar bills. That's the reason why Nixon switched it over, because
exactly.
The foreign government started asking for the gold itself.
You know, so if there's not enough gold, you could forget about a lot of companies who need money right now for the invention that you need. You could forget about a lot of things.
Now is the Federal Reserve is we're paying taxes to pay off the interest that the Federal Reserve is just printing money. And it's reducing the value of the currency.
It's a 269. Hey, Alex, where would you recommend someone buy the gold and the silver from?
Well, there's multiple sources you can get it from, but the one of the most popular and easiest places is APMEX, APMEX. I think American Precious Metals Exchange, or whatever it stands for, APMEX.com, and you can buy actual ounces or half ounces of gold and silver, and you know they deliver it to you. You know you got to look at the quality or whatever, like the how pure it is going to determine the cost of it. And there's a small processing charge, but it's not something that's for a short investment. It's like a long term, because over time, like say years down the road, when you go to sell it, the value of that coinage is going to be more than you know, what you paid, even in processing fees and everything. So you know, it's not something that you flip around in a couple months and you're going to make all this money on. No, it's like it's for your savings, or and even invested somewhat, even investing, but for the saving of your money that you set aside for saving, you know, not your liquid money that you do for your day to day or whatever. But you know, so yeah, there's a lot of different companies out there. You know, you can go on like a Scottrade or TD Ameritrade and buy equities or what they call EFTs of gold, but that's like, it's literally like paper gold.
Right.
It's not, you don't really have it. You have stock in it. I don't particularly care for that, but some people do that too, you know. But I prefer to actually get it in my hand and put it in my safe at home, you know. And, you know, whenever we can afford an ounce of silver or a half ounce or a quarter ounce of gold, then we buy it. And then, you know, and it goes in safe. Yeah, and it's and the value of it always goes up. One thing you got to be wary of with silver, you have to watch the value of it a little bit more than with gold, because the government and the banks are trying to manipulate the value of the silver, but it keeps going up, and because you know their shenanigans can only last so long, so you'll see it go up and then it'll just drop, like, you know, maybe $10 or $15 or whatever, and then it's a little bit more erratic. Like if you look at the value of it compared to gold, gold is a lot more stable. So you may want to look at silver, and like if you see it dip a little bit, then buy it. Then, you know what I'm saying? But you can't pay attention to all the fluctuations. Look at more of the average over time. When you look at the average over time, you'll see that, you know, regardless of all the variations, it's over the last 10 years, it just keeps accruing in value. You know.
Well, one of the things that I would recommend, particularly blacks, one, get a damn passport. That's one.
Yeah, I got one of those.
And you know, we just look at, you know, the markets and the economies here, but. The all of the world's economies are not like ours. So there are economies that are on the rise, and particularly in Africa and in the islands. If, you know, if a person has money to buy gold, I would imagine they have money to invest in other things. So I know we're not talking about the average person, because the average person ain't got no money to buy no gold. So
Yeah, they did.
What do you mean,
does.
Cut back?
Everybody. I mean, budget. I mean,
you just
gotta. I mean, even if you only set aside $20 a month, and you can't buy, and you waited, and it took you couldn't buy a piece for every 6 months or whatever, then do that, or every, you know, 3-4 months, then just do that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I understand that people are, you know, are poor, a lot of us are poor, but I came to the realization a while ago that it doesn't matter how much money you have, it's about how well you manage your money, because I've just seen so many people with a different mindset come to this country who had much less than I did, and they turned around and were, you know, very doing very well for themselves in a relatively short amount of time. But black people here, we want everything to be given to us, and we don't do what other people are willing to do to make it, you know. And I've seen several immigrants, people come from other countries, from Haiti, from Ghana. I have a brother from the Congo. You know, people that come here and they doing it, but it's about their mentality and how they view money. You know,
Well, I think you, like I said, you will have pockets of blacks who maintain and able to show some measure of success. You're going to have that whether we have this conversation or not. But as far as the masses, I don't know what the future holds for that. But
isn't that sad?
Yeah. Michigan, well,
I mean, seriously, it might be real, but is it not sad? And is it not our responsibility to fight for those who are weaker than us?
Well, the reason why it's not going to happen because the mentality is very different, and its root is in slavery, and African Americans have not been able to overcome that.
But you didn't answer my question. You gave me a statement, I said, is it not sad? And is it not our responsibility to fight for those who are weaker than us?
Are we
not our brother's keeper?
Well, I think you're correct if you have that type of consciousness that you feel like you're attached to them. All black people don't feel like they're attached to other black people, but if you feel like you are attached to them, I would say yes. I would only add that in most cases, what happens in America, when you say fight for them, the concept of how you fight and what you fight normally is a three-card molly game, and that never works either. So you said, well, fight for them. Well, who are you going to fight? We ain't even clear on what we need to be fighting. So
hey Tracy.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an example because, since I was thinking about the richest man in Babylon, you remember the story in there where he talks about the ox and the mule? You remember
okay.
that story?
Yeah.
Where essentially the mule observed that the ox, they were both owned by a farmer or whatever, and the mule observed that the ox was out tilling the field, just working hard from sun up to sundown. And so the mule basically tried to help him out. The mule tried to help the ox and gave him some advice and told him, if in the morning, if you lay on the ground and moan and act like, your stomach hurts or whatever, then don't think that, you're sick. And so then you won't have to work that day. But then what ended up happening is the farmer just hitched the mule up to the tiller and made him plow all day. And so then at the end of the day, the mule was upset. And because, only thing that ended up happening is the mule ended up doing the ox's work, and the ox never figured out how to work himself out of his own condition. And so you have to be careful not to do that, because I think that when we talk about helping people, I think that, we've done a lot of that. That's a part of the entitlement mentality that we see in a lot of black folks and how they why they're where they are now, because of that entitlement mentality, and they we haven't really helped them. We actually just enabled their dysfunction.
But I'm saying with our knowledge, and I understand the entitlement mentality. I do that. I understand that wholeheartedly. But with what I'm saying is, hold on. What I'm saying is, but there are those who are less knowledgeable about things than we are. But even though they kick and scream at you trying to deliver them out of what they're in, are we not supposed to go and try to make, not feed them, but teach them how to fish so that they can survive?
Well, I think it's your Christian duty to help all people, regardless of race.
That's true.
To help
That's true.
For themselves.
That's true, but that's what I'm saying. But I'm looking at a group of people who are working their way into genocide and don't know it. They have no idea how extinct they are. When I look and you see them setting themselves up for the slaughter, should I not yell that they're getting ready to put gas on you when you go inside that room?
There are two things. And without bringing the religious talk into it,
say. And I understand that, you know, that's what a Christian is supposed to say. It's your Christian duty, which is correct if that's what a Christian is supposed to do. But I think, again, we love to cut our own wrists by, you know, starting with this political mentality that we are the world, right?
Wait a minute.
I always say that when I, because it's easy for blacks to get sidetracked and say, okay, yes, right, I'm a Christian, so I'm fighting for everybody, see? And that's a fatal mistake as it relates to politics. That don't mean you're not being a Christian with everybody, but that's a fatal political mistake, it's a fatal social mistake, and it's a fatal economic mistake. Now, you can run that game all you want to, you know, the Christian game. You can be a Christian with everybody, but you need to, there's some strategic strategizing that needs to go on within the black community.
But
so
again,
I just wanted to say that to the Christian talk.
No, but see, but you said you didn't want to bring that into it.
Only because the
brother just said that's a Christian thing to do, but I just want to know,
okay,
am I not supposed to fight for the weaker? Because you see inside of our communities, you see the demise every day inside of our own families. You see the devastation, and because of their ignorance, they don't even realize that they're setting them up for destruction. Should we not yell fire inside of a burning building? And right now is not the building burning in the black community?
Well, I think it's absolutely burning, and I think you don't even have the tools to put it out. It's going to burn down. So, you know, it would be depending on what you're talking about. See, that's what I say. We have to move away from this abstract talk.
But go back to what I said. Is it not my responsibility? Because right now what I see us doing is I see us leading people. That goes back to my conversation about Cornel West and Tavis Smiley. At least they have the kahunas to stand up and say, you guys are not getting what you deserve based upon the vote in which you cast.
Yeah, well, so if that's what you mean when you say, that's what I'm going to yell, instead of the words fire, I'm going to yell, hey, you're not getting what you're supposed to get with the Democratic Party.
No.
Huh? That is not water to put out a fire. The fire that's in the black community, that doesn't put that out.
But what I'm saying is it continues on. I'm watching the do you realize that the manipulation that they played on African Americans when they talked about voter suppression this year?
Absolutely.
Do you see what they do you understand why they did that?
To get some votes.
Do African Americans understand that they were played?
Absolutely not.
Is it not for us to yell to them, listen, they are manipulating you based on your emotions?
Well, but see, now I think you're talking about now the character and who and what the African-American is in this culture. It's almost like saying, hey, the sun has sun rays. Well, that's obvious.
But
the position of the African-American, y'all can sweep it under the rug for a third time. The position of the African American in this European culture is constant, and it's supposed to be.
Hey, you know what? I think that you need to. I hear what you're saying, Tracy, but I think that people don't. What people respond best to is a good example, like a working example. And so what I think needs to happen is we can't – basically, the answer to your question is yes and no. Is it our responsibility, whatever? Yes and no, because you can talk until you're blue in the face, but people – it's like, yeah, it sounds okay, but, you know, but people don't really believe it until they see it. You know, and so really whatever you think needs to be done, I think that we have to organize with people, only with people that see our vision and do it and actually have something tangible that works well outside, you know, that can be seen and demonstrated.
And can
and
I add
something
else?
Do that,
let me finish. Go ahead, Alan.
And once you do that, people will automatically gravitate towards that because people want success, but they gravitate towards the Republican Party because that's what they know. They haven't seen any other political measures that have worked for them, and so unless you organize and do something that will actually, produce some fruit, then you're just going to keep talking to your blue in the face. It won't matter. You have to actually, you got to build something. You got to put brick to mortar and build something. And like they say, build it and it will come. It's like with anything, any kind of organization or idea, you have to build it, and everything else will come in place: the people, the money, whatever you need.
And I think that's why we enter into this talking cycle. If you look at what area of people interaction have African Americans not excelled in at one point or another, which ones?
Business. Well, no, we excelled in business.
Huh?
No.
We never excelled in business.
We have.
Okay.
Well,
so I said name one where we have not.
Okay.
Yeah, there isn't one. I mean, we've excelled in every area of this country, but we're all disconnected.
So how do we connect?
The one of the functions of moving from local to regional, just like an organism, and picking up steam has to do with momentum. Momentum. In every area where the black community was beginning to pick up momentum, and this is why I don't know if this is Alex or South Carolina that always says this, we cut our own throats. When we were picking up momentum, we cut our own throats.
That is true.
Now that's the bridge that, I haven't been able to connect. But the connectivity is – it comes through momentum. If you look at any of the industries where blacks were picking up momentum, the black banks, the black schools, the black business, the momentum drives it national, right?
Okay.
Okay. So if you said, so how do we connect? Tell me which area right now where blacks have momentum.
There is no area where they have momentum.
Okay, so then that answers Tracy's question. There is no connecting nothing. How can you connect something that doesn't have momentum?
That's because they don't have a purpose at this point in time. There are people that are heading, like Mitt Romney said in his book, No Apology, there are people heading towards a permanent underclass because they have no direction.
Well, Dr. Claude Anderson said, you are not heading towards... Now you are a permanent underclass. Now he could be blowing smoke, but it certainly looks that way.
We're not a permanent underclass. We have the ability to choose right now if you're going to be permanent or semi-permanent. The question is, what are we going to choose? Because see, right now is the time of choosing. We would have done better prior to this election. But since this election is over, we're going to have to choose in the next 4 years if we're going to be a permanent underclass or not. Because remember, white guilt is all gone. It's gone. So now the question is, how are we going to make sure that we don't need anything from anyone and become self-sufficient?
Well, I gave you my opinion yesterday. I don't think too many people agree with it.
We didn't like your opinion.
Yeah.
Hold on. 334, your mic is on.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. How you doing?
Right. I'm doing pretty good. I was doing a little, I know I always call. I was doing some research. But I saw something interesting out. I went and did some gross domestic product, whatever, did a list or whatever. And this is not including the drug trade, which probably takes it even higher. We come out in estimates of anywhere from $850 billion per year in the black community over over a trillion in annual income, spending power black people have. And if you take that and measure that against the economies of the world, we're like number 16. I thought it was 15. It's number 16 in the world. So I think everything that you guys just said, I think to go and focus out a bunch of them, I think, what is it, Michigan says, it can't hit 30, 40 different things.
Right.
One of them is just, you know, I find that the idea about the education was just great. Yes, I think, yeah, take the 4, 5, 6-year-olds. It was one of with us having the 15th largest economy just within the black community in America, we could probably, you know, structure a system whereby we could have an optimal education system for the African American. Once you get that education fixed, all the other dominoes will fall.
Yep.
I do believe that. But you have to, if a person can't think for themselves, then they're doomed from jump. You can go and give them all types of checks, tell them to start a business. They don't know how to, they don't know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know their own history. They don't know a lot of stuff. So they're already defeated. So I think, you know, we got the resources. I don't think we need nobody's help. I think it's just, we're going to have to kind of change some priorities. We're going to have to get rid of some of these 30, 40-inch rims on these cars and probably take, I mean, we can afford all that and strip clubs and, you know, and do some of the things we do and still complain about our condition, then, you know, we're not being honest. And I think,
But when I say we, and we, it is a we thing, but as I told my cousins, and they got mad at me the other day because they said, I said, you guys are going to have to hold this administration accountable. I said, well, what about you? I said, well, I'm on the other side. So I really can't go up to Barack Obama as a Republican and say, dude, you need to do better because he ain't going to listen to me. I can't even get an invitation to the White House. Whereas African-Americans that are on the other side can.
But so what Michigan was saying, and this is the thing, I think he's right. Screw the government.
Yeah, you can't.
This can be done.
Yeah.
Screw him. Barack Obama is going to screw us, period. We know that. Everybody, even Democrats. We bought that. We need to go. This right here can be structured and done privately, and it needs to be done privately because if you put government funding in it, it's going to start getting to deal with racism and
emotions.
But, Tracy, you're saying emotions are basically once people start dropping emotions into it.
I agree.
Community in order to do that.
I agree. But listen to what I'm saying. Right now, because of legislation, because legislation drives everything that we do. It does. Legislation drives everything. Everything we drive, every school, every textbook, every curriculum, every standardized testing, everything we do has a legislative piece to it, whether we like it or not. And I believe with all my heart, you can't do it all one way privately now because we have tied ourselves so much to the government itself. That's what I'm saying. I believe that we have to start with the kids. But see, it's kind of hard to start with your children and they're 3 and 4 years old and you send them home to their parents and their parents reverse everything that you've actually done in the 7 hours that you have them in a day.
No.
One at a time. Go ahead, Alabama. Okay.
No, the point I was trying to make was that you look at the Jordans, you look at all these different companies that benefit off of the dollar that comes through the black community. You look at all these Lebanon and Arab-owned businesses. I got a friend of mine, she owns a beauty supply. She's telling me that the Koreans are telling people don't sell them the good weed. They hide it when they come in the distribution packs and tell them they're out of it just to keep them black-owned beauty supply stores from having the right product. So, I mean, these people think this way, and I think that I hate to say it, but you have got to start just saying, you know what, we're going to, you know, what's it, Alex said his child goes to a school somewhat similar.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there are places like, there's this guy in California, I think I posted it on your Facebook page, they're spending $3,000 per kid a year, and these kids are coming out and running circles around teachers, kids that's in the public system getting $15,000, $20,000 a year out in L.A.
This is what I just said, Alabama, and then I want Michigan to jump in. Listen to what I just said. Alex sent his child to a school, and the school teaches his child what he wants him to be taught in a way that he's going to learn and he's going to excel. And then he comes home, and he actually cultivates that which he is taught. and does not reverse the process of reading, writing, and arithmetic. So when his son comes home using a vocabulary that is larger than Alex's, Alex does not demean him because and say that he's talking down to him. Am I getting that right, Alex?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So now, if you send my child home and my child begins to use words that are larger than my vocabulary, and I think that my child is turning is talking over me, now I have really – I got an issue. So all that my child has learned, all that has been taught inside of that classroom is null and void because now I tell my child he's talking too proper and he needs to – or I'm going to bring him down a notch.
I understand. I don't disagree with nothing you just said. I think there are parents like that, but you got to still also take into effect that if a child comes in, gets that education through the community collectively,
correct?
The parent may offset certain things with telling them not to talk white or whatever, or hypothetical. But at the same time, I think collectively, if the community came together, like at that school, just hypothetically speaking, there may be some parents that send their child in there for some reason, they don't know why, but they send them there. But they don't use proper English, or they may joke on their child for speaking proper sometime. It may happen, but that doesn't necessarily mean if he's sitting there exposed to that and being taught and indoctrinated every day in a positive environment, he comes home, it's better to have some positive indoctrination instead of trying to work through our regular public school system, which, already from jump tells him, hey, you came from slavery and you and your people ain't really did nothing in history and stuff like that. I think that's even worse. I'd rather have my child in a school like that.
And I agree with you. But what I'm saying to you is what's happening is, and what's going on in a lot of your inner cities, when these children go home, they're demonized by their surroundings and their environment.
Can I say something to that?
Go ahead, Michigan.
Okay. All right. Now, the analysis of, the what ifs, right?
This ain't a what if because the reason why I brought it up is because we had a whole show on this about how children were going home
and they were
being demonized by their environment.
Listen, there's no question that when you're talking about environment, it most certainly has an impression on children. But here's what has been shown to work. The stronger you give a child a political identity, and the earlier you give it to them, it's hard for it to be washed out by a dominant culture. And so now here's the other thing to that statistic that you were just mentioning, Tracy. If you notice, in all societies, it's never the masses that set up societies or save societies or expand societies. It's just a percentage. So you're talking about a percentage like a vanguard, the 4, 5, 6. You're talking about a percentage that comes out of that quote-unquote saves this African-American that what we're trying to do. So you are going to have a little bit of that, a little bit of resistance from some of it. But we're talking about the momentum will wash that out. The momentum will wash that out.
And what I'm saying is it would have to be a collective effort across the whole picture. Because when you pull 1,500 students out of a 10,000 student body, those 1,500 students are going to go back into an environment, and we have to change the culture of the environment. Our problem is, hold on, I'm not trying to shoot it down because I agree with it. What I'm saying is we're going to have to re-indoctrinate the parents, the environment.
Tracy, they're done.
They're not done.
Tracy, let me ask you a question. Even if you look at the New Orleans charter school situation, certain charter schools, we've seen the principle does work, that you can have a mom who's come from a lower education level or whatever, doesn't speak proper English, but their child goes to that situation of a better education system, and they come out, and that child is not hurt because their parents
No. Because you have to realize, a lot of us came out of homes where we are smarter than our parents. That's not what I'm saying. It's not about the knowledge of our parents. It's about the indoctrination of supporting their children, of them becoming knowledgeable.
Well, another thing, when you start talking about who's smart and who's not, I mean, I think we need to reexamine what intelligence, because if you go to the regular agricultural gregarian education system, all you need to know is math and literary genius. Anybody that's artistic or anyone that can do all types of mechanical genius, that's not even recognized as being intelligent. So I think there are all types of form of social, all types of intelligence. And I think it's sad that we only recognize one form.
I'm not talking about formal education, because some of our grandparents are smarter than we will ever become. But I'm with you on that. What I'm saying is, but our grandparents had a affinity for higher knowledge to make sure that our grandparents couldn't read, but they had a skill that we didn't learn the skill because we thought we were better than them.
They
died with their skill.
They got let out the gate of slavery and ran, and it was taken off. And that's why Dunbar, I don't know if anybody on the phone is from Bentley Brown, Dunbar High School. I was just reading about that, man. Dunbar just went down in the late 70s, but Dunbar was like top in the country. It was all black principals and everything. It was going off, and then all of a sudden, something happened. I don't, and they were talking about around the 70s, it just went down. And now it's one of, it's just an average school now. But
we have gotten to the place where we don't have the affinity for education in our own communities. And because we don't have the affinity for education in our own communities, when our children come home educated, we demonize them for their knowledge base.
Tracy.
Yeah, Alex.
The thing about that, this is why I don't like government schools, or people call them public schools, but whatever. You can't force anything on someone that they don't want. And so, when it comes to parents that send their kids to certain schools, like the school that that my children go to, there's students up to about 13 years old, and starting from toddlers all the way up to 13, an African-centered school. And, you don't have that because the parents, if the parents made a conscious decision to send them there, and some of them are ghetto as hell, and it doesn't matter, their kids come back and all they say is, oh, they're just proud. They talk better than their own parents, but they're proud.
Hey,
my baby's so smart. But the thing is that when you talk about government schools, no, nobody appreciates anything that you just give them, which is why I don't agree with government schools in the first place. I think that all schools, everybody should get a tax break for if they choose not to send their kids to public schools, and then they can use that money to invest in their kids' education wherever they choose. That's how I think things should be. I don't think you'll ever fix the problem by forcing an education on a large group of kids. It just furthers that whole entitlement mentality. We have to get rid of all of it, and just we need to give people their money back. Give people a tax break for not going to public schools, sending their kids to public schools, and then letting them use that money to spend on whatever means of education, even if it's homeschooling. Let them do here's what it does. It puts the initiative on the parents, and then once that happens, you see when you see parental involvement, it doesn't matter what school that kid goes to, that child will excel.
Alex, you're talking like you're trying to actually figure it out and come to a solution. This not the objective of the government. The government is to make sure that their union that gave them that campaign contribution is happy. And the unions, literally, I can send you a video where the unions say, our job is not to take care of the students, it's for the teachers and the union members.
Right.
These unions are fighting what you just, because anybody with a brain can sit and say, well, they don't want to come. Just what you just said makes a lot of sense. But making sense was the objective, a whole lot of stuff, we wouldn't have a lot of issues. These people don't care about that.
Can I tell you something right quick? The reason that the school choice thing doesn't work is because of this. I think it was, what's the brother who went blind, Alex, the African scholar?
John Henry Clark. Yeah.
Yeah, he said this. He said, if a black child cannot come out of an education and fix the problems of the black community, then you have not educated. Yeah, okay.
Well, back up for a second. I mean, I sent my children to an African-centered school, and what I'm saying is that part of the problem is that, you know, that most parents can't afford to send them to their kids. I mean, on average, I think it's most like about $500 a month, only about $3,000 a year. But a lot of parents can't even afford that, so they just don't send them there. And what I'm saying is that, you know, to incorporate a lot more people into schools like this, and this is one of the reasons why African-centered schools don't thrive, a lot of them don't thrive, and why there's not more of them, is because it takes money, and it's just, that's one of those resources that we just don't have disposable. And so I agree with what you're saying, and you know, I've studied Dr. Clark, and that's true. We our educated children have to be able to solve our problems, or at least be able to adequately, effectively attack them.
Okay,
the
only reason I had brought that up was that, so when you're talking like that, then now you're talking about a tailored curriculum.
Absolutely.
Not a universal curriculum, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so now if you're talking about a tailored curriculum, you're talking about a political curriculum.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now
everything's political, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. So then that's where the connection with Alabama of, okay, the disposable money is there, is, and then the other brother said it's got to be a priority.
But
then
my
Tracy,
question,
and then Tracy said, don't we have a supposed to be helping our brother? So the creating of the this group that saves the African American group, it has to be a concerted effort of everybody. So
absolutely.
That those with the disposable income set up the schools so the kids don't have to pay.
And this is the issue. We have the resources. Hold on, because I want to bring, because I think I know there's Rick out there. We have the resources at our disposal. We don't utilize them because it's not our priority. For some reason, we don't feel it is though.
Because they're getting it for free.
No, I'm talking about those of us who have the money.
We're talking about the Vanguard, yeah.
Because you got to understand, you can't, if we can afford $200 tennis shoes, we can afford education. The question is, when are we going to actually start putting our resources, because there are people who look like us who have the money to do what's necessary that will not put the money in our community nor tell us the truth so that we can get a better education so that we can become equal with everyone else in the world.
But I was trying to say about Alabama, just in Alabama, for example, you guys teachers out here that got classes of 30, 40 students, and they're probably making $30,000, $35,000. I mean, the parents, if you take 30, if you just divide that out, we're not talking about an insurmountable amount of funds that need
right.
to be raised.
Right.
And especially if you're talking about maybe 20 kids to each student average. And it's, you know, I remember when I was in school, you know, when I was in elementary, we had kids, I was reading on a different level. There was the intermediate, there was a lower level. You could do this with grades. It doesn't have to be one teacher teach one grade. It could be one teacher teaching three grades
right.
like it used to be. And you could still... This is not impossible. I think the impossibility aspect has been sold to people, just like people think it's impossible. If right now they had a government program where they've been paying people's rent across the whole, every black person's been getting free rent. Right now, we was trying to say, no, we need to stop doing that.
But
it would be
that?
World War V. But everybody, right, you know, just because we don't have free rent, everybody doesn't have free rent right now, everybody's getting along fine. And just like Alex said, I think if you got rid of this free education system, and started allowing people, then people to start, well, wait a minute, I'm paying my money, what's going on? I don't care if it's $50 a month a week.
We actually have a program in the state of Ohio where this, we could make this happen. The question is, who's willing to put up the time, the resources, the knowledge base to make things like this happen? Because as we all know, the new civil rights is education.
Well, that's why I say, Tracy, you have to, when you're talking about multiple dysfunctions, when you're talking about being strategic, that's why you have to tailor it down, and you have to focus.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
Overall, you can focus, but you have to have the resources and the same mindset to make it happen. Go ahead, Rick. Hold up.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rick.
Listen, now I hear Alabama, I hear Michigan, I hear Alex and Trace. My concern with all of this education talk that we're having, My only concern is this. We're excited, or there's a certain group of African-Americans that are excited because we have a black man in office. We were under the impression this black man would be possibly a game changer for specifically the African-American male as a whole, the African-American race. We thought he would be a game changer. This man that is supposedly educated, this man that has supposedly come from a background that says, I've been there, I know what you're going through, and I've passed the test at different levels to say that I'm qualified to be this person. What I'm concerned with now is all this education that we're talking about that we're trying to do with private funding schools and all this other stuff. The only reason why you become a game changer, the only reason why you can come back and change a society, help to upbring a society, is if you can come back with threatening information that tears down another society.
That's not true.
Because if you're going to come up, then you've got to, 9 times out of 10, you have to tear down something that already existed. All right? So hold on.
Wait a minute, Rick.
I was going to try to co-sign it to a certain extent. I was about to ask Michigan a question.
But hold on. Let him finish his statement, then let me pull you back in, okay? Because I want to hear what the rest of you has to say.
All right. So we'll look at – I was under the greatest impression that this new black president would be under the greatest threat of assassination because he's black. And it occurred to me he's not going to be assassinated. And it has nothing to do with him being black. It has everything to do with the fact that he's not a threat to the establishment of America. If anything, he's going to push the American agenda, whatever that is, that does not help to bring about a change for the African-American male or African-American people as a whole. So what we have to start doing is realizing back in the day, I'm going to use the Mafia, for example. When the Mafia had their territory, you know what they used to do? If you were a small-time person coming up in the Mafia's territory, they allowed you to do certain things for so long until your business began to interfere with their business. The United States government is the same way. Because I'm an American citizen, we allow you to do so much until your business begins to interfere with mine. And when your business starts to interfere with mine, however that may be, they shut you down. And that doesn't stop you from doing what you know is right, because it didn't stop Martin Luther King from marching. It didn't stop Malcolm X from preaching. It didn't stop John F. Kennedy from getting ready to establish some things that would change the CIA and the FBI forever. But still, these men were assassinated for interrupting an establishment that they did not want to change. Look at the people that are alive today. Who is really a martyr for a cause themselves?
None of them.
Go ahead, Alabama.
I don't agree with that last statement, but what I was trying to say was that I agree in the sense that to do everything, to implement what Michigan and Alex is talking about, you're going to have to literally come in and get rid of the status quo, which is what Rick is trying to say. Yeah. You're going to have to come in and demonize something, and that's what he was saying, and I'm thinking, how are you going to do that without it being called racist? I think everybody on this phone, even we have different worldviews, we want what's best for our people. But how are we going to do that without being called Uncle Tom? Oh, look, okay, if you're a Democrat voting for Barack Obama, you start talking about getting rid of the free education system and watch how they say the white man got you, the white man's puppet, you the white man's dog. That nobody's going to be able to implement nothing we're saying until we're able to really deal with that aspect of black people, blacks that are going to fight to make sure that the education system that we have is going to stay in put. Not white people. Black, you know, it may be some white liberals involved, but it's going to be mostly blacks saying, hey, my child can't get it. I can't afford it. As soon as the system changes and it's for the better, they'll be the first ones happy about it. But they don't understand what's that.
Hold on, stop. Now, Alabama, I got to tell you this. That's not true, because let's go back to D.C. a couple years ago. Remember the mayor of D.C. came in and started changing some stuff. Kids started learning, and the unions went in an uproar. What they did was they voted him out. They fired Michelle Rhee. And hold on, they voted him out. They fired Michelle Rhee, and they got things to go back to where they used to. And President Obama came in and signed it to where they couldn't have vouchers.
But this, hey, Tracy, now can I say something to Rick?
Can I say something, Rick's point?
Go ahead.
And this is where, if you notice when I said this requires a strategic curriculum, a strategic political curriculum. You remember those words coming out of my mouth? Here's what that means. First of all, you understand, you don't have no business trying to overthrow another man's culture and society. You're sending those kids to get an education to build one for yourself. That's the first thing. So now, this issue of you finna come in here and change the status quo of American education, no, you ain't. That ain't even what the Vanguard's purpose is. It's the only thing rivals a culture is a culture. And you're absolutely right. Because we have that history of knowing that whenever you try to set up a culture where another man has a culture, he has a duty to stop you. Well, if you have that political culture, why do we keep trying to do it?
You have to answer your own question. The reality is it happens.
I'm not trying to do it. That's what I'm saying. That's why I say it requires that you give the kids a certain political culture. You have no business trying to overthrow his society.
But how are you gonna implement
what you just said, though, Michigan? I mean, okay. I'm asking. I'm not trying to pull it apart. I'm just trying to ask how you're gonna do it.
Okay, because as part of the political education, you understand that you are attached. Well, now we finna get into Pan-African talk. But I mean, you're
man,
not
just do it.
Okay. The issue is not to deattach yourself with the African race around the globe. Thus, you're not necessarily trying to redo America. It's about how do you position the African race for the next 1,000 years.
But you
and that may have nothing to do with America.
But you are trying.
You
let me say
that?
This. Hold on. Let me say this, and let me say this, because what you have to understand is what you're trying to do is redo the American race. Because
the American race.
I'm sorry, the American way of life. When you start talking about getting real education into real African American homes in the inner city,
I'm not
you
trying
are,
to do
let,
nothing
let,
to
hey,
the
stop,
American
let me finish,
way.
Let me,
Tracy.
Let me let, can I finish what I'm saying? Didn't I let you
but
talk?
That's not true, though.
Let me finish.
Because
when you change the paradigm, you change the effect of everything around it. See, right now, because of lack of education and because of me being a follower and not standing up and being a leader, you can lead me into a pandemonium to stand in line to vote for someone because you said so. And when you change, and when you change and you allow me to think on my own, you change the whole paradigm, which changes America. Because remember, we need to understand the undercover, I would say that, so the under, well, the underworld economy is based upon the inner city, and it's based upon ignorance. When you start bringing people up out of their poverty in mass numbers based on education and you make them viable, you're going to change the whole future of America. Tracy,
I got to go back upstairs. I just want to make one point. Go ahead. It's a guy I'm sure a lot of y'all heard of named Big Meech. He used to sell drugs over in Atlanta, right? This guy was, I'm going to tell you what he did. He went out and he got just a guy in Ohio, a guy in Mobile, Alabama, a guy in Chattanooga, Tennessee, guys in Chicago. He had a network. He was organized. They didn't even know he was that deep. This guy ran, and he sold more dope than a lot of people. I mean, in this day and age, than not like it was in the 80s, but I'm just saying. Now, I'm not trying to glorify what he did. What I'm trying to bring out a point is he implemented it. That's why sometimes I make the point. I'll be like, well, man, what, we can establish a network. I was trying to get South Carolina phone number. I think if everybody comes together in a sense and say, look, we all disagree on certain points, and we be at each other's throats every day, but there are certain things that everybody wants that we can find a common collective ground. That's what
Absolutely.
That guy did. That so, because Big Meech did, he got a collective ground with those guys in these different cities. Some of them were from different gangs. A lot of them were Crips or whatever, but they all came together and was like, we all trying to get money. I don't care if I don't like you. We all trying to get money. We trying to get X. We trying to get Y. Let's do it. And that's what he did. He came out and he
Hold
did
on,
right. that. And it worked. It worked.
Let me show you guys something really quick because we only got about 10 minutes. And don't leave Alabama because you got to hear this. Let's look at the mafia, the Italian mafia.
Thank you.
Okay, I got to go back to what Rick said. Now, let's look at how they – remember, they were called organized crime. And they they organized their way to legitimacy. Because now all of them have college degrees, and now they run the business legitimately. Now, let's look at Let's look at the drug trade. And let's go to prohibition, when it was the alcohol running. See, alcohol is now still a state-controlled product. And when African Americans, back in the 80s, they were trying to legitimize themselves by going into legitimate business based upon their funding of illegal drugs, they seized theirs and their businesses also. And they changed the laws to make sure that they could never go legitimate.
They shut you down.
So that when they caught you, not only did they catch you, but they all, even the businesses that were in your cousins and your parents' name, if they felt as though that they were built upon drug money, they seized and forfeited all those properties. So you got to look at this parallel. At
what
happened?
That have to do with what
hold
we're
on,
about?
Hold. Let me finish.
Okay.
You got to look at how it parallels when you try to change the paradigm of your community. Because you said it earlier, every time we get a footing, somebody comes and puts oil on it to make sure that we don't get ahead.
Yeah.
Did you not say that?
So now
but you're not trying. But you're,
Grace,
but you're not trying to change. Listen.
Education. African American. Listen. Education in the black community will change the paradigm of America.
That's right. They're not going to allow you to bring the entire black community out. That's not the goal of the.
Yes, it is.
That is
the goal.
No, it is not.
Finish that point, Michigan. Finish that point, Michigan. What you were saying?
Hold on, Rick.
The whole idea.
No, it was not. It was the whole idea. The idea of focusing on a vanguard group inside of America was not to rechange the entire black community in America. That's not going to happen.
Hold on. Let me ask this. Hold on. Why would I only want to change a few? Why would I want not to change the sum?
Listen, Tracy, when you're talking about positioning a race,
Why would that never happen? Why not?
It has never happened in history.
So what?
You never get 100% of anything.
So why can't I have 95? Hold on.
Okay.
Don't tell me. You're right. I never get 100% of something, but I can get 95% because I can get 95% to vote for Barack Obama. Don't tell me I can't get 95%.
Hold on. Tracy. I think he owned something in the sense that W.E.B. Du Bois, which was like one of the guys that kind of helped start the Pan-African movement.
Yeah.
He was like the talented 10th. He's talking about that talented 10th. And I think just like in America, like you got the Andrew Carnegies and all these certain people around in the last turn of the century that were their talented 10, so to speak, and they did move the whole collective in a sense that they were able to come out and make it better for the rest of them. I think what Michigan's trying to say is you get a good 10% talented 10 to come out and do what Michigan's talking about doing and what I think everybody's trying to hint at, then I think what will happen is in over time, everybody of African-American descent will rise because I have no prejudice towards my brother. You can come in my job with dreads and say what's up, and I'm not going to be like, oh, he's unprofessional. Just as long as you're good at what you do and you treat the customers with respect, I really won't care. I think that's what I think. Michigan, am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're not wrong. But even in the natural process, even a virus does not go into a hostile body that's going to kick it out. It goes somewhere where there's the least resistance. So now what are you talking about? In trying to move the African race forward, it has very little to do with the black collective just in America. Don't you understand that? The place of
America, you're saying, and I'm going to use your analogy of the virus, it would seem as though the virus is the black man and America is the person that caught the virus. I mean, listen, dude. We are not that virus that we're trying to come in and get our germ spread across the world. No, we just want to be able to know that in this country, I don't know about the rest of the world, in this country, every opportunity that seems like an opportunity is available for all men and not just some.
Good luck. Good luck, brother. Good luck with
you. And listen, hold on. And let me say this. hold on. Now I understand that everybody won't come, but I think that everyone ought to have opportunity.
They're
my
not
question,
even going to let you do that.
Hold on.
He's saying something good because he's still talking about what the guy, what's his name, Rick said. Everybody having that opportunity. You got people that went through slavery just like us coming here making bread. So
I
think
that.
He's right.
But again,
I think he's right. I think Michigan to join it together is saying is let's affect the mindset of a few instead of worrying about it. Because let's tell you, we all talk to that lady up there screaming about her Obama phone. You ain't finna talk to that lady about no education for real. That lady don't care. She just want what she can get. So
let me tell you how
people like that are lost.
But hey, let me tell you how you rescue a person that's drowning. Let me tell you how you rescue a person that's drowning. Instead of fighting with them about what you know can save their life, you know what you got to do? You got to knock them out. So I can't just let you go and save myself. But if, just so that I know you get saved, just because I want you to be rescued with me, I might have to go on here and knock you out. And then when you come to and realize, oh, I'm alive, and not only am I alive, I'm better here than where I was. You appreciate.
I gotta. Rick, tomorrow we'll do this again. But let me say this, Rick. I have to agree with something that Michigan's saying and something that Alabama's saying, because actually, when you go inside of it, when you go to save somebody who's drowning, if you're not careful, they'll pull you down too. And so you have to be very, very cognizant when you go to save somebody. Sometimes you need to just pull out a pole and send them a lifeline, and hopefully they'll grab onto it. Because if you go in there to save them, they're going to pull you down with them because they don't want to be saved. And everybody does not want to be saved. Everybody does not want better. And I can only help you if you want better. I got to go. We'll see you guys tomorrow. God bless you and have a good day.
All right.
You've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. It is 58 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock, and we'll see you on tomorrow. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
New Airborne Hot Soothing Mix with 14... 14-